the good men gone away. The fruits of all our labors have left us as we started. We've come too far to end it in a day. It seems that everything we do is wrong. I want worship to know we're all alone. Just look around and tell me what you see. Another stupid piece of history.
No one together, no one is touching.
Faces of the people in the street.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 23rd, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by app, phone, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your question to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up scripture reading where we left off two weeks ago. I wasn't here last week, and Gerard had picked up for me. Let me just try to move things around here. Okay, we're going to be picking up in John chapter 20. So we're in John chapter 20. Okay, read by Alexander Scorby. It's John chapter 21. I'll get there. Okay, John chapter 21, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 21. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter, and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth, and entered into a ship immediately. And that night they caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus saith unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. As soon then as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. Jesus saith unto them, Bring of the fish which ye have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus saith unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou, knowing that it was the Lord? Jesus then cometh, and taketh bread, and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples after that he was risen from the dead. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things, thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, When thou wast young, thou girdest thyself, and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, follow me. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Then went this saying abroad among the brethren, that that disciple should not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him, He shall not die, but if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? This is the disciple which testifieth of these things, and wrote these things. And we know that his testimony is true. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen. The end of the Gospel according to St. John.
Okay. Today I want to get on a campaign for constitutional sheriffs, and we've been pushing those books and reporting, you know, by email how many books we've been going out, and hopefully, you know, we'll speed up a little bit and get to all 3,000 sheriffs. But right now we've got a couple of hundred books going out to sheriffs. One person had donated quite a few of them, and we actually have one state that is complete, that we have going to all the sheriffs in this one state. What I'd like to do is take a look at some of the letters that are being written. Sheriff Dart in a letter. I don't know whether I've actually read this before or not online, but let me see if I can find this. Okay, maybe it's here. Let me see if I can find this Sheriff Dart's letter. Now, this is a letter that's going out with the book to every sheriff that we're sending a book out to. And I may have read this before, but also National Liberty Alliance, we are also putting a letter into the book, also sending it to sheriffs. But this is a letter being sent out that Sheriff Dar wrote, Sheriff Dar Leaf, from Barry County, Michigan. This is my fourth term as sheriff of Barry County, Michigan. I've said for many years that every passing generation, a constitution gets more and more diluted. It is now to the point that the current college generation recognizes communism more than our own republic. Even the law enforcement community does not get training on the constitution. Instead, we push our law enforcement family through an academy based on case law from activist judges. We, the people, need the tools to restore the republic. And Government by Consent is a must-read and study guide to attain that goal. So get your notebooks and your highlighters out and arm yourself with the tools to bring back common law constitution. When we do this, the whole world will follow. And then he signed it. Okay, so that's going to be going out into the book, Government by Consent, as we send them out to the sheriffs. Now, we also are writing a letter. This also will go into the book that we're sending out to all the sheriffs. And let me get this reading here going. Dear Sheriff, National Liberty Alliance is working with Barry County, Michigan Sheriff Dar Leaf to organize and educate all county sheriffs in order to save our natural law republic. Samuel Adams said, if virtue and knowledge are dispersed among the people, they will never be enslaved. This will be their great security. Thomas Jefferson said, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. This is NLA's goal, to inform the people and their sheriff, discretion via education. The enclosed book is a gift from members of National Liberty Alliance with a desire to save our natural law republic, a weight you also must bear. Look around you. America is falling, and it is incumbent upon us to restore our republic. We, the people, are building committees of safety, as our founders did to create our government in all 3,000 plus counties, in order to return to the law of the land. When a committee of safety is developed in your county, we are dependent upon you to work with the people to bring our government back under the Constitution. All sheriffs take an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution. If the sheriff then relies on a county civil law bar attorney that we the people did not elect to interpret natural law, then the sheriff violates his or her oath because we elected and vested the sheriff to interpret the natural law. Sheriffs are responsible for knowing the law. Civil lawyers do not know the natural law. Natural law is self-evident. It arises out of common sense. Sheriffs are not vested to enforce codes, regulations, and statutes masquerading as laws. Sheriffs are vested to enforce justice, where life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are paramount. As Sheriff Brad Rogers put it, a sheriff can and should interpose for his citizens an overreaching federal, state, or local government. If sheriffs take an oath and are ignorant of the Constitution and do not endeavor to understand our founding documents, then they violate their oath. This book gifted to you will transform you into a fully informed sheriff, who is then worthy to be our supreme law enforcer of the county. The truths in this book are self-evident and documented with more than 1,600 footnotes. To deny them would deny the 8 ancient biblical principles that Thomas Jefferson discovered that our republic was built upon. These principles for sound government are self-evident truths that are so obvious, so moral, that they cannot be denied. 2. They are built upon the laws of nature and nature's God. 3. Built upon the fact that all men are created equal. 4. That people are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. 5. The unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are paramount. 6. Governments are instituted to secure these rights. 7. Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And 8. People have a duty to alter or abolish government destructive of these ends. For a constitutional course for yourself and your deputies, go to nationallibertyalliance.org. You can also download a free sheriff's handbook at nationallibertyalliance.org/handbooks. Respectfully, John Durash, NLA founder and author. Postscript. Join Sheriff Dara to learn our constitutional authority at thesheriff@commonlaw.com. Okay. I guess we may take a look tonight. Depends on the time. I see we've got some questions and some announcements going on. But I do want to take a look at our booklet, our handbook. It's a PDF copy. People can get it up online. It's for the jurist, grand and petit jurist handbook for the fully informed jurist. But we'll see how things go. We may get into that tonight. Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements?
John, I'm Jen tonight, and yeah, we have.
You're buzzing. I can't understand you at all. You're coming in very, very low.
Okay.
Is Terry coming in low to everyone else, or is it just me?
No, I'm probably low. Is that better?
Getting a little better, but it's really hard to really hear you.
How about that?
That's much better.
Okay. Yes, we have a couple of questions tonight. One that Jan gave me and one that is in the queue. So, whenever you get ready, and Brent's here too.
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay. If I can pull that up. Will says, resurfacing this, can we get a listing of the sheriff counties that have had their book donated?
Yeah, you know, someone also sent it through mail, that question. In fact, I had two or three people asking that question. And I asked the question, why? Because the only thing that'll do is to tell the person that might donate a book Well, my sheriff's got one already, so I don't need to donate it. Look, we need to get this book into the hands of every sheriff in America. It's not enough to just get it to one or two or three sheriffs. The sheriffs need other sheriffs to back them up. They need to stand shoulder to shoulder. And when many sheriffs within their state know the common law and understand the battle a lot better and get a stronger backbone to stand up to these tyrants, they're going to need more sheriffs to stand up with them. So I'm very hesitant to post that. I am keeping a record, of course, and I've already printed out all the labels for all 3,000 plus sheriffs in America. And obviously when I go for a label, if it's missing, I know that a sheriff has already gotten it, so I'll take the next sheriff next door. But I don't want people to start thinking, well, my sheriff has one, so I don't need to help. Everybody needs to assist in this. Everybody should be buying their sheriff a book. And again, if your sheriff already has a book, then another sheriff within your state, another sheriff in another county will get that book until we get all the sheriffs. Once we get all the sheriffs with a book, we'll announce that, of course, and it'll end our campaign. I know some people want to buy the book, and I know some people have bought the book for themselves and then for the sheriffs, and they wanted to personally give it to them. And people can do what they want, and people have done that. We have sent out some books, more than one, to one person here or there, and I suppose that's what they were doing. But it's really important that we prime the sheriff, that we get this letter coming in from another sheriff. Sheriff Dar wrote a letter for this book to introduce it to the sheriff throughout the United States and all the counties. And it's also important for them to get a letter of contact from National Liberty Alliance, letting them know that there's more support out here. There's a lot of information that they can get their courses. And I also understand that Sheriff Dar and Brent is going to be working, of course, so that's why we added at the end of a postscript at the end of the letter, let people know that they can go to that website that we had read out and posted on that particular letter. They can get more involved and connect with Sheriff Dar and again, other sheriffs. So that's why I decided not to post it. There is a state. One state that has already got enough books going out that the entire state is done, or all the sheriffs are going to get it. And I'm hesitant to say that also, because again, then people from that particular state may decide, well, they got it already, so I don't need to donate. It's unfortunate, you know, we've got a large membership, and it's unfortunate that we haven't really got these books out to all of our sheriffs already. You know, we've got almost 10,000 members, and we've only got, I forget what the number is. It's getting close to 300, though. Let me think. Is it? Well, maybe not. I don't remember how many books, but I'll be putting out an email, making note of how many sheriffs got a book to remind the people that, hey, we still need more books. We need to get more books out to sheriffs. So for that reason, we're not going to post the counties. But when it is done, we will, of course, let everyone know, hey, all the sheriffs got it. We also have a protocol. You know, in the letter, we're introducing them to the people locally that will be building committees of safety and will be working with their sheriff, as we had read in that paper just a short while ago, that letter. And so that's kind of priming them to get ready to let them know that there are going to be people in their county working to try to save this nation. We have to take back control of our political process, and we're not going to be able to do that unless people get involved on their local level. We can't win back the political process unless it's done on the grassroots level, county to county across America. We also have to take back our courts. But we can no longer allow the courts, the elected or appointed individuals, to control our court system. This is the people's court. Either we're going to have a trial by government or a trial by the people. And right now we have trial by government. Anybody that goes to court, they're being tried by the government. The government decides everything. They stack the juries. They decide who's going to get onto the juror seat. They control them and tell them, we will interpret the law. You get to look at the facts, but we interpret the law, and you got to rule according to what we say the law is. Well, that's jury tampering to begin with. It's an assault upon our liberties. We, the people, are the lawmakers. They are not the lawmakers. We, the people, wrote the Constitution and put them underneath that Constitution. We, the people, are above that Constitution. And so it's up to the people to try the people. The government needs, or anybody that is making a claim or a criminal complaint, they have to bring that to the people to see if they can get an indictment. That's the grand jury, untainted, an untainted grand jury. And if that grand jury thinks that there's enough evidence to push forward for a possible conviction in a case, they'll give an indictment. And then it's up to the people to decide innocent or guilt. It's up to the people to decide the law. And we're under common law. We're not under civil law. We're not under equity, where an individual that is a servant, whether they be either elected or appointed, gets to choose our fate. Well, that's up to the people. And unless the people take control of those things on the grassroots level, we'll never have our full liberty. We'll never be truly free. And we'll always be in a situation where we'll continue to lose more and more liberty, as we have been, at least over my entire lifetime. I've been watching liberty just disappear every year, it seems, more and more. And we need to turn this around. So we need to take control of the courts. We need to be the deciders on who, for instance, to call for a grand jury and orientate that grand jury, or to call for the trial jury and orientate that trial jury. It's not up to the government to do that. It's up to the people to do that. Now, of course, that's a full-time job, and people should be paid for it, but they should not be people who are elected or appointed by the government. It should be people on the grassroots level that have taken on that particular job and go forward with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, taking a vow to God to make sure that they are very careful not to taint those juries and not to press forward their will, but to make sure that they are fully informed jurists so that justice can prevail. So for those purposes, we need to really take control and connect with our sheriffs. Now, we wrote a handbook. As a matter of fact, let me go to that handbook. Get to our website here. Other than the jurist handbook, we did write a committee of safety handbook. If you go under people, I know we've spoken about this before, but I don't think we can ever talk too much about it. Underneath the tab people's duty, you come down to handbooks, and we've written a number of handbooks. We did have an individual who's been taking our handbooks and actually putting them up onto Amazon and selling the handbooks and making money off this, which we're going to make contact with that person, let them know that they need to cease and desist from doing that. These handbooks are free. And at some point in time, when I know I can get a good deal by buying a large number of handbooks, we can then sell them potentially very cheap, we'll sell handbooks for the pocket size handbook. So if people want to buy them, maybe we can sell them for a buck or two, maybe even less than that. But nevertheless, these handbooks are still free. They'll always be downloadable up on nationallibertyalliance.org right here on this page, where you can click on the Committee of Safety Handbook, for instance. Let's see, here's the COS handbook. Okay, you can click on that and you can download. This is 74 pages, and this was last updated on March 18th, 2021. And if you go through here, we lay out a very precise and specific plan, a protocol, in order to put together a committee of safety, how to form it, how to bring it together, what kind of committees that you should potentially bring together to work. And we also be doing the same thing in our own counties. And so that's up to we the people to do these things. But again, there is a protocol on how to approach the sheriff and when to approach the sheriff. And by getting these books to the sheriff before you even approach them, really primes that sheriff. It sets the stage for that sheriff to be able to receive and communicate and understand what the Committee of Safety is doing in their county and how this is being worked out across the nation, and how every sheriff is also getting behind this thing, working with the people to save our republic. Now, some people who are in the know, so to speak, who are watching and realize that there is a plan to save this nation, that the military is about ready to make some moves soon, and that Trump is still behind the scenes orchestrating things. You know, clearly he didn't leave office just to let America fall. He didn't do all the work he did just to let America fall. He promised that he would never allow this nation, this country, to become communist or Marxist. And he says the best is yet to come. So we know that something is going to happen. And it's a matter of time, and it's his timing. And there are a lot of people that need to see what's going on. And, of course, that's why things are going. He's given them all the rope that they need to hang themselves. But no matter what he does, no matter what the military does, the people still need to receive the control of government. They need to have government by consent. They have to consent to government. So they have to know how to do that. And without a proper education, they're not going to know how to do that. They don't understand. Very, you know, a lot of people, I'm very surprised, a lot of people just don't even know what the committeeman process is and what the job they do and so on and so forth and how it's been hijacked. You know, those are the people that decide who gets onto the ballots. So when people wonder, how come we keep getting all these criminals we have to vote for? Well, it's because we're not paying attention. We, you know, they've hidden this from us, of course, also. But to a sense, we're not paying attention. We're not getting involved. We're not volunteering in our counties. We're not doing what has to be done to take this nation back. We look into our courts and we scratch our heads on why is it that the Constitution isn't being upheld? How come we're not getting due process? How are they taking our homes without due process? How is that going on? What's going on? Where are our unalienable rights? How is it that they can even talk without being arrested, in my opinion, talk about using their political platforms that they've been elected to in order to take away our Second Amendment? Who are these people? Are we that far lost that we don't understand that that's a crime? It is a crime for them to use anything to destroy. If they're going to use their political positions as a platform to destroy our unalienable rights, to take it away from us, to continue to erode our Constitution, to continue to do things that we never gave them the authority to do, we're going to lose this nation. And it's going on because people don't know. They haven't been paying attention. Now, that's by design. I mean, I myself have never really learned in school proper education concerning civics, concerning the Constitution. I've never learned that. I had to learn that on my own. Clearly today they teach communism. Sheriff Dar mentioned that in his letter, that college students today recognize, I think he said communism, or pretty sure he used the word communism or Marxism, whatever it was, that they seem to recognize that more than they do who we are as a people. What is a natural law republic? You know, who are our founding fathers? What did they have to say? What is this nation built upon? You know, these are all things that people don't know. And if sheriffs don't know this, we can't have liberty. We cannot have government by consent. But we can't have a natural law republic. It's not for us to have if we don't have law enforcers that understand that. If the law enforces, that being the sheriff, is actually a code enforcer, what good is he? What purpose is he? And that is in opposition to what and who they should be. So anyway, we do lay this out very specifically, how to build a committee of safety and the right kind of mindset, and we lay out a number of different videos that should be shared at the beginning, particularly. There's a lot of videos, but there are three or four videos that we've laid out that should be shared at the beginning of the meetings. And in maybe two or three meetings, that you should be prepared at that point to be able to approach your sheriff. But until you organize and be able to reveal to the sheriff who you are, what your thinking is, what your position is, what your attitude, what are we doing, you know, you can't really approach your sheriff yet. But you have to organize. We have to set, we put off a committee of safety charter, okay. So every committee of safety needs to have a charter. So we set forth the framework. It's 5 pages. And you'll add to that what people think they need to add to that in their counties. But we should at least be created in such a way that we're reasonably interchangeable from one county to another, so that we're doing the same thing, and that so that we can work together on things that we have to work together. You know, there are situations in a county that people have that may be unique to that one county that they have to deal with. They have to deal with government at every level. They have to deal with government on whether it be on the town level, the village level, or the county level. But then you have the state problems, and in order to deal with the state problems, you've got to go county to county. You need a majority of the counties working with you, realizing, for instance, Agenda 21, you know, which actually is a national problem. It's not just in one state, it's in every state. So little we have to work state to state. You know, when we have a situation, we have to do certain things where we have to communicate throughout our state or throughout our nation. So this is what the Committees of Safety is all about. This is what our founding fathers did. And every committee chose an individual that would represent particular area way back before we were states, when we were colonies. So it's important that we set forth a charter. And this reveals to the individuals that we're going to approach to bring back under the chains of the Constitution, that being, of course, the sheriff himself and that office, and all the necessary government offices, whether, again, whether they're a town office, village office, whether it's county or state. We have to bring them back under the Constitution. And when we approach these people, we need to let them know who we are. We do that through a charter. We also let them know what our will is, because then we also have a Committee of Safety resolutions. Okay, now this is 9 pages, again, a framework. And people will alter it according to their counties and their own situation and how they, because it's grassroots and we're free to do what we need to do. But again, we want to try to organize in such a way so that we are interchangeable, county to county, state to state, so we can work together on a state level. We can work together on a national level and make sure that we have government by consent. We need to take control of our courts. We need to take control of the political process. And by the way, taking control of the political process, once you have enough people involved in your county, you could do that immediately. You don't have to wait to become an elected committee man. Because after all, the people that are controlling this right now, they're not elected committee men. The whole thing's a facade. They're not elected at all. But what is to stop us, we the people, to come together and overwhelm that system and put in people into office that are worthy to go into office, people who are statesmen and not politicians? What's to stop us from walking the papers to get them onto the ballot? What's to stop us from walking the papers of recall to bring them, take them out of office if they break their oath, if they fail to do their duty? They did this in California. The people did it. The committeemen didn't do this. Well, the people took that governor out in California by a recall. And a few other places, recalls have been going by the people, rightfully so. So we don't need to be the elected committeemen. Once we gather together and we get the numbers and the ability to be able to walk the papers to make a change and to be able to put good people into office and to take people out of office, and then eventually we should become elected committeemen. But until then, we don't have to wait till the next election and the next year in order to do these things. We could do it now. We could do it for the next election. But it's up to the people to get together on the grassroots level and build their committees of safety. So anyway, I guess that's all I got to say about that. But these handbooks are all up there for people to have. We have the Committee of Safety vow. And again, we've been through all this before, but I don't think we can never do this too much. But here's a vow that everyone takes. I vow to the Governor of the Universe in my capacity as a member of the Committee of Safety to serve, protect, and uphold the United States Constitution and Bill of Rights, and to carry out all of my duties to serve the community principled under justice, honor, and mercy. And it's the same thing, the same vow for those who are going to work in the courts to uphold these things and to come with a sense of justice, honor, and mercy. And we need to police ourselves, because we'll get some radicals. There's always a sociopath that'll come in, or a psychopath that'll come in. No matter what goes on, there's always sociopaths and psychopaths that'll be drawn to power or things. And we have to be careful when we see them to make sure that they don't gain some great control over this situation. But again, that's up to the people. It's up to each county. It's up to the grassroots to do these things. We also have, again, the Sheriff's Handbook, which we mentioned in the letter, you know, that's available. And these handbooks, again, freely are given, and people can print them out and share them. And each one of these handbooks, we have this note right at the beginning, because we're not going to let people make money off this. If we can make a few dollars off of this, in order to support this process what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. That'll be nice, and give the people the ability to get a nice, you know, pocket handbook that they can stick into their shirt pocket, or a woman to put it into their purse or something. That'd be nice. But that's not going to be a requirement. You could still have the information for free by downloading it, the PDF, and it's, you know, 8.5 by 11 pages, and everyone can have it. But National Liberty, let me read the note that we put in the front of every one of these books now. National Liberty Alliance gives permission for the copying of this book only in its entirety. This handbook is not to be sold, but only freely distributed for liberty. Okay, so people can have this book, they can download, and this will always be up there. Even when we get the pocket handbooks up there, people will be able to download this. If you don't want to buy a handbook, that's fine. But again, people would like that convenience. It'd be nice. I have a pocket handbook. I've got quite a few of them for, you know, the Constitution. It's convenient. It's nice. I can print it out on 8.5 by 11, you know, piece of paper and print them out. But it's much more convenient to have a handbook. So we'll do that. But there is someone up there selling our books on Amazon, and I got to find the time to get up there and do something about that to stop it. And this is, you know, these people are making money on our work and selling things, and they haven't done any labor to do anything with these things, you know. You know, someone told me, why get a book? Why don't you just email a copy of the book to the sheriff? Well, first of all, it's 900 pages. It took a long time to put this together. And, you know, just emailing pages doesn't do, or emailing things doesn't do really much of anything. We had done that. We had fax machines going, and I still have all the equipment. I'll get back to that one day. We had 10 fax machines going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for months on end. Maybe a year. I don't know how long we've been doing it for maybe close to a year. And that, those machines were faxing out to sheriffs, to everybody in office, to governors, to the legislators, sending them information. But that's only a fax. They see it as an advertisement, maybe. I don't know what they see it as, but it's ignored. But when you get a book, something that's nice, put together, it's published, and it's out there, and in that book, you know, this book has 1,600 footnotes, so it's well documented. The book, everything that's in the book, is well documented. And so when you put a book out, people put a lot more weight to it. And when you put you do the campaign that we're doing with a nice letter from a sheriff to sheriff, a letter from us, National Liberty Alliance, who we are, how to find us, and what's available for them for free, a sheriff's handbook and courses and so on and so forth for themselves and their deputies. And then they take these, then they get the book. I think it's much, well, I know it's much more impressive. It's taken much more seriously, okay? So that's why we do that. And could you imagine trying to fax out or email 900 pages to begin with, you know? But let me read one other thing, which I haven't read yet, and this is a short one, and then we're going to go back to if there are any more questions and announcements, and then move over to Brent. I was thinking of, again, doing something on the Jurist Handbook. We're going to read through this. This is 38 pages, and it might take 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll read a portion of it every week, maybe 20 minutes worth, until we get through it, and hopefully maybe discuss it after we speak about it. And I certainly hope that people would like to discuss the things that we're talking about, at least in the beginning of our program, the things that I brought up, or the things that Brent brings up, or the things that Gerard brings up. Let's get a discussion on these things. Let's get questions. Let's get comments. Let's get correction, you know, because we're open for correction also. But anyway, we're not going to do this book tonight. We'll maybe next week we'll start reading through the book. I think it's very important. I do believe that this book, if you read through this book, because this is a book that would be given to all jurists, okay? If they read through this book, they truly would be fully informed jurists. They will understand the power and authority they have as the people, and that they are sovereign, that they are the lawmakers. We decide the law. We're the final decision. We come into court and we make a decision as a jurist. That's the final decision. The United States Supreme Court can't even overturn that. Yet we have judges that'll be in a courtroom and overturn the jurist. I mean, that's how far away from liberty, from truth, from a common law republic we have come, that we don't even recognize the fact that we have a tyrant that has no power, no authority to be able to do something like that. Who are these people? They're hired help. They're servants. Does the servant get to judge the master? And the answer, of course, is no. The people must judge the people. Remember when Christ was crucified, before he was crucified, the question was asked, you know, the question was said, let the people decide, you know? And, but in any event, this handbook we'll look at another time. Now, there is some more handbooks up here. You can take a look. There's the Sheriff's Handbook. There's the Militia Code Rules and Resolutions. A lot of that was put together by Brent, and I worked with Brent on that. And he wrote a handbook for the militia, which you can also get a copy of that on our website. We have the Common Law Handbook. We have the Committee Handbook, the Vow, the Resolutions, and the Committee of Safety Charter and Handbook. So again, all of that is free of charge. Now, let us, before we move on and take another, I think there was another question, but I'd like to, let's see, put it up here. This is going to go and be inserted in the jacket of every one of the books we're sending to the sheriff. You know, someone had mentioned, they said, well, you know, the sheriff that in my county is leaving office, and it's not that he's even running again. He's retiring. And so, you know, we want to make sure that the new sheriff gets the book. And I realized that that's something we need to think about. So I figured I'd put this in the jacket of every book. As soon as you open up the book, you know, you'll get the two letters tucked in there. And right there on the same page, you'll see this, you know, statement. And these are stickers, they're, you know, labels, shipping labels. So we'll peel them right off and put them right into the book. But let me read this, what it says here in this the sticker that we're going to be putting in to each book. This book is the property of the County Sheriff's Office. This book is presented by We the People to the Office of the Sheriff in order to provide an education necessary for a natural law republic. It is intended to be passed from sheriff to sheriff of this county sheriff's office. Thomas Jefferson said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. This book is that suitable education that we never had in school intentionally." Okay, and then of course we got the our website up there so they can come up and get more information. But I think this is clear. The fact is, this is intended to be passed from sheriff to sheriff of this county, of this county sheriff's office. So we want the book to remain in the sheriff's office, so when one sheriff either retires or another sheriff wins in a battle, a political battle, then that next sheriff coming in has that book available to them. Because, again, no one is educating these people. No one is educating you. No one is educating any of these people in office. They have no clue about the Constitution. Just watch and see what they're doing. You know, look at all these elected people, these appointed people. Look at these judges. They need to learn the law. They have no clue. They do not know the law. They have no clue of the law. All they know is civil law, control, Babylonian law, Justinian law, Roman law, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same thing. Different name, same package. Okay? It's slavery, control of the people, control of the masses, municipality law, all the same thing. Controls the people, fleeces the people, takes money from the people, and so on. Let me move to, did you say there was a second question, Terry?
Yes. Eric asks, I am having a problem with the U.S. Secretary of State, or a.k.a. the U.S. State Department, accepting my mail. I'm trying to serve them with a declaration, which I need proof of delivery to file into open court, county court records. I have sent the affidavit twice to them, both via registered mail. The second, I added the return receipt card. According to the USPO, the U.S. Post Office, neither have been received. They reached D.C., and then they just stopped moving according to the computer system. I believe they're breaking mail protocols or policies purposefully. Which course of action do you think would be the most effective to get the post office to complete the chain of custody?
Well, look, the first thing we need to do, it starts with us. We need to get educated, and we need to get our sheriffs educated. This declaration that they're trying to file, if it's what I understand it is, I mean, I got caught up in that thing myself some years back. Gerard and I both did, and we filed declarations. First of all, if you're going to file a declaration and put it out, as a public notice type thing, you want to file it in your county. You go down and file in the county seat. That's where it gets filed, if that's what they're doing. And that's what it sounds like they're doing. No one's going to pay attention to this stuff anyway. And again, you're filing it in the wrong place if that's what you're doing. But there's no reason to make a declaration of who you are as one of the people. There's no reason at all. No matter what you do, a lot of these people out there teaching these things, it's like they're teaching you're going to go into court, you're going to say a few magic words, click your heels, and you're going to be transported into a court of justice. Well, that's not going to happen. So, now, hopefully everybody's hearing me. I'm seeing that there's a problem on our conference call. Terry, are you seeing the problem on the conference call also?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we are still here, so we're talking.
We're still on, yes.
Yeah, I saw it happen a little while ago, and I do see it from time to time happen. This is pretty long, though, but we'll see what happens. But anyway, you're not going to get justice in these courts. We're filing papers, and we're still going to file more papers and do different things in the court because we're building a case against them. It's a nail in their coffin. We're certifying and sending things into the court, and we're saying things that they need to respond to, and they refuse to respond. When they have a duty to speak and they remain silent, that's fraud. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that themselves, and that is true. It's fraud. When they have a duty to speak, then they must speak. And if they don't speak, then their silence is a cause to be called for fraud. Put a declaration concerning yourself. First of all, is just notifying them, come get me when you come to make the arrest or put bullets in the back of our head. Choose, get me first because I'm the guy. Really, that's all it is. We're not going to get to that point. 4 or 5 years ago, I thought we were going to get to that kind of a point. Okay. But now the tables have turned, and I see something else happening, of course, and I see justice coming down. So I don't think we're not going to get to that point. But nevertheless, we're just marking ourselves. Also, it's not going to achieve anything, at least not in this environment, in the court environment. It's not going to achieve anything. It's not going to achieve anything on your county level. It's just not going to achieve anything. So why waste our time with those things when we can really do other things? We can educate ourselves, educate our sheriffs, educate other people who are running for office, who get involved with the committees of safety and do the work of the people that we should have been doing in the first place. Liberty is not free. And it's not it's not granted to you for some reason. You got to work for it. You got to labor for it. You got to give up something for it. You got to give up your time and sometimes your money. Right now, you do have to give up your money. Anybody who's not volunteering their money to something to support the movement is not doing their job. Okay, we have to support the people who are putting out the good work, and we're doing a lot of good work right here at National Liberty Alliance. And this book, in my opinion, this book is the most important thing we can do as a people, because again, we got the people who are the sheriffs are the law enforcers of the county. They need to understand that they're there to protect the people from an overreaching government, whether it be on a federal level, state level, county level, town level. They need to be there to protect the people. That's their main job. They are the law enforcers. And who's the law to be enforced against? It's not against the people. It's against government. It's against the people who are abusing their power and authority and stepping into jurisdictions that they have no business being in. But sheriffs are not educated to know that. That's why, again, the book. You know, someone wrote a letter saying, you know, stop with the advertisements already. You talk every week about this book. Well, look, this book is important. I'm going to continue to talk about it. I don't want to put as much time as I have been. I didn't intend to spend this much time tonight to talk about this book, and I really wanted to focus in tonight on the handbook for the jurist, and we will do that next week. But I'm still going to plug the book every week until we get this book in the hands of every sheriff. We had one individual who bought 62 books. They bought 20 books, and a couple of days or so many days later, they bought another 20 books, and then another 20 books, and then another 4 books. I think it was 64 books, because then they bought 4 books. You know, people who have that ability, I wish they would do it. You know, if people have that kind of money, the best place to put it is to invest it in your sheriff, to invest it in the sheriff next door to your sheriff, and the other sheriff, and the other sheriff, and get across this nation to every sheriff a book. So anybody that can afford to buy a lot of books, you know, we really appreciate that. We've got a lot of books ready to go out. You know, when we got our first shipment of books, we shipped them out, and a lot of them were going to regular people, and some to individuals that we need to get interviewed by. And when we have a lot more to go out. And I'm waiting for a second wave, and there's probably about 3 or 4 people that have purchased books, and they haven't gotten it yet from us. And I'm still waiting for those books to come in. But I'm prepared right now. We've got 100 and some odd books, almost 200 books. Again, I don't remember the number, but I'll be posting it maybe tomorrow or tonight. Tomorrow I'll post out to an email how many books have been going out to the sheriffs. So we got, I think, close to 200 books going to sheriffs, if I recall. And, you know, again, we need to get a lot more, and we need to plug this, and people need to step up and do something. But more than that, you also have to get involved locally. You have to get your committees of safety going. You have to get active on the grassroots level. And if we refuse to do it, A, we do not deserve liberty. We do not deserve this natural law republic if we think that someone's going to do it for us. No. We have government by consent, which means you must participate, you must consent. And your actions, what you do with your money, what you do with your time, how often you come to meet to make decision, who's going into office to get involved as committeemen. You don't have to get elected to do that. And you know what? The elected committeemen and people who aren't elected, they can still work together, and it's more of a force and much, much more easier to work papers and get people on the ballot when you have a bigger force. So again, people don't have to become elected to do the job, okay? And it's just as good as being elected. It doesn't matter. And we have to take back our courts, and we have to respond when they call for the jury. When you get the jury call, you need to go, and you need to be the person to correct the jury. Then they say, hey, wait a second here. We got the power of nullification. We're the lawmakers. You need to educate them. Bring the quotes of our founding fathers with you. Bring the handbook. Of course, that could be problematic in these courts because they don't like the truth. It's like bringing the cross to Dracula. You know, they just don't like that. But if we don't get up and get active and teach our children to be active and our children's children, then we are not going to have liberty, and we don't deserve it anyway. We do not deserve the blessings if we're not going to get under the law. And getting under the law gets to know the law, the common law, the natural law, our natural law republic. Okay, any other questions?
Hey, John.
Yeah, Gerard, go ahead.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear
me? Go ahead, Gerard. Yep.
I just want to make a comment here. This fellow that's trying to send a paper into the Secretary of State, I mean, that's the Secretary of the United States, and it's in Washington, D.C. Now, just a couple of things. We've been watching Washington, D.C. Ollie's been watching, and that Richard's been watching, and it's been a ghost town. Nobody around. It lends credibility to the story that they're arresting people. So, I mean, it maybe he's in hiding. I don't know. When you send registered mail, it either has to go to the person and get signed, or it has to come back undeliverable. The other thing I don't know if there's a sheriff in Washington, D.C. I don't know how that runs, if there's anybody like a sheriff. But technically, you could send that to the sheriff and have him serve it on the Secretary of State, give him the $30 or whatever he gets. You know, I don't know what you're sending. I'm not critiquing your declaration. Look, if you have to send a paper to the Secretary of State, you should be able to, regardless of anything else. So I'm just giving you some clues of what else you can do. So if it's stopping at Washington, D.C., it can't stop. They have to say it was not deliverable. Now, how is it not deliverable to the Secretary of State? Somebody's got to be able to accept it as Secretary or something, right? So that's a problem. It shows a dysfunction in our system. So as long as that happens, it's a sign that our government is not together yet, that we are under military control, that Trump and the military are working behind the scenes, and these other doodads aren't even showing up for their jobs anymore because they know that basically they're puppets. That's my feeling. But anyway, I would find out if there's a sheriff there, find out if you could send it to him to send to the Secretary of State's. It's your right. Between registered mail and the sheriff and stuff, it's your right to serve him whatever you want to serve him. Now, I don't know what you're serving him. Like John said, you want to be careful because you could make yourself a target. But regardless, if you need to send something to one of those people, it should get there. I mean, we've sent lots of people lots of things, right, John? And I don't think we've ever had any trouble with them not getting
it. Yeah, it's always gone. Everything we've sent has gone through.
Yeah, so if they're not even, if it's going there and stopping, that tells me that it's a ghost town, that it's completely dysfunctional, nobody's home or something to that effect. That's what I would think. And that's why you're not getting through. I mean, they even send us stupid replies sometimes. Remember we'd send something and they would send it back saying they'd make some stupid excuse why they couldn't deliver it?
Yeah, something.
But they always respond because leaving it sit there, I think, to have it go there and stop, that's a crime. You can't take a registered letter that's supposed to be signed for and just drop it in your dead letter box. That doesn't work.
Did they say who they addressed the letter to, Terry?
No, they just to the Secretary of State, U.S. Secretary.
Okay, well, that's who they sent it. There's someone in the office. There's got to be someone to take it. I don't understand that. So.
Right, somebody's got to sign for it.
Right.
Even if it's
the Secretary of State is not going to sign for it. I mean,
no,
the,
his
secretary,
somebody.
Right. Someone
you're right,
that's the doorkeeper is going to sign for it. So that's really strange. So I don't know what to say.
No,
but again,
it's something that he should be aware of, and maybe he could look at. That's a whole other battle you can bitch about. we got to straighten this country out, and that's one of the problems. The lights are on and nobody's home, okay?
Well, the only way those problems are going to be corrected is once we get power back, then we have to accept that power and get active. We got to do it. The people must participate in their government. We have government by consent. We need to be the consentors. We've given them the authority and the power to do certain things. You know, we've got Article 1 of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, particularly, where we lay out the powers of the legislature. They have 18 powers, nothing more, nothing less. 18 powers they must pay attention to and take care of that business. Nothing beyond it. The civil law is beyond it. Laws to control the people is beyond it. We also gave authority, of course. We got Article 2, given authority to the administration. We got Article 3, given the power and the authority to the United States Supreme Court. And we limit them to law and equity, but very particularly mostly in equity. The law, when they get involved in courts of law, it's when they champion the rights of the people. Mm-hmm. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They should not be getting involved in courts of law, because that's the people's job. We either have trial by government or trial by the people, and we must have trial by the people, not by the United States Supreme Court. But in any event, if people are not going to get involved, you can't have these things. You have to get involved. You have to be busy. You have to be busy on the grassroots level. And some of us, will run for office and uphold our oaths in that office and exercise the authorities and the jurisdictions of that office properly. And when we have a duty to speak. And that's what we the people have to do. So, again, we get back to the same thing. We don't have liberty because people are not doing their job. We're giving them the knowledge. And unfortunately, people don't have the knowledge of how to have liberty. They don't have the knowledge of how to do these things. You know, NLA has been researching this. We found what we found, and we're offering it to the people. I'm sure other people have come to some of these things, but I don't know of any place that has collected together all of the powers and authorities that we have collected together and put in one place to offer to the people on a grassroots level. Okay, is there any other questions? I think that you said there was only two. There's nothing else?
Yeah, well, just one more. If my county sheriff's department is very corrupt as the courts, mm-hmm. wouldn't it be appropriate to purchase the sheriff's book?
Of course. Okay. Of course. Look, we're sending it to the office to begin with, right? Yeah, they may leave office and take the book with them and stuff, but look, we need to do the right thing. Who knows? Maybe they'll leave it there, you know? Yes, we don't want to make a decision. Yeah, there's some corrupt sheriffs out there, and yeah, there'll be a wasted book here or there, but that's just the way it is. We're not going to try to make that judgment because we really don't know. And what a person thinks that their sheriff is corrupt, they may not necessarily be corrupt. Maybe they're acting in a way that they believe they should be acting, trying to be obedient to the oath, but because of their ignorance. Terry, can you mute yourself because there's a lot of interference coming through you. Thank you. Maybe they're trying to do the right thing, but the appearance of what they're doing is the wrong thing, and the appearance is being seen and say, oh, my sheriff, he's corrupt, he's no good. Well, maybe he thinks he's supposed to be applying the codes upon the people. They don't know. They're as dumb as we are, you know, and I speak to myself first. I was totally ignorant to this stuff until I started to research and find the truth. So now people need to get the truth, and the sheriffs need to get the truth. So let's not make a judgment, across the board. My sheriff is corrupt. I mean, maybe you do know. Maybe they are really that corrupt. But generally, it's the appearance of corruption, and that appearance may be through ignorance of how they think the job should be run. You know, they think that they're police enforcers. They're not. They think that they're code enforcers. They're not. No, they're law enforcers. They're to enforce the law, and their ultimate job is the Constitution, protection of that Constitution. Of course, you know, you can't take a person's life, of course. You know, they're involved in murders and different things, of course. Anytime an person is injured, they have to protect the injured party and make sure that injured party gets restitution by sending it into the courts and arresting those people that need to be arrested and so on. But primarily their job, no matter how you go about it, it's to protect the rights of the people, whether it's one person assaulting another and injuring another person's rights, or whether the government is doing it, the right to live, you know, if someone takes your life or tries to take your life. We have to get involved. That's the bottom line. Any announcements, Terry?
I don't have any announcements, and that's the end of the questions.
Okay. Next week.
Just real quick with the sheriffs.
Yeah.
One of the problems we have is every new sheriff gets a free ride. Well, it's requirement, apparently. They sent them to the FBI training school at Quantico. Now, I always thought that was terrible, but if you think about it, the sheriff has access to the FBI labs if he's actually doing criminal, you know, investigations, and he may need that. That's not a bad thing, you know what I mean, that they offer the sheriff help. But it's generally a brainwashing school, and they set him up right from the beginning that, you know, tell him what he can do or what he should do or whatever. What would be very interesting, John, is one of these sheriffs that we're friendly with, we should get them to document what they're teaching at that school, mm-hmm. so that we can go after them for any treasonous stuff that they're teaching the sheriffs. And I think every new sheriff that comes into your office, once you know what they're teaching them, the least we should do is go back and say, look, we know you went to Quantico and they told you this, this, and that. That's bull crap, and here's why, because that's treason. I think mm-hmm. every new sheriff needs that, and it's up to us to give it to him because you're not going to get it anyplace else.
Well, again, you know, Sheriff Darr and Brent are going to be working on giving a course, and we've given them the website, and hopefully that connection can be there and they can discuss those things. Brent is here tonight, so, you know, I'm sure he can put that on his list of things to be addressed for the sheriffs, and maybe we can address that directly ourselves with Sheriff Darr.
Right.
But it's something to look into. I'm going to hopefully be seeing my sheriff again shortly, and it's something, a discussion I'd like to have.
They want to regulate them to administration for the court.
And well,
I'm
yeah,
sure
that's
that
why
Quantico is probably really, really reinforcing that. and they probably tell them, don't get involved in this other stuff. We got other people to do that.
And that's why they have to be educated. That's why they have to know who they are. No outside entity, meaning the government, the federal government, okay, they should not be coming into a state, into a county, to enforce any warrant or, you know, any kind of a paperwork at all without letting the sheriff know that they're heading into town, and the sheriff should be there when the warrant is being served, and he should examine that warrant to see if it's a lawful warrant, because 9 times out of 10, they're not lawful. It's a lot more than that, maybe even. I'm sure it is. Look at any of the IRS warrants. They're all unlawful, every single one of them. USC 26 cannot be applied upon the people, and it even says within it it's not the law, and they never have a judge's signature. They don't have a sworn affidavit. You know, they don't have proof of claim, which is a sworn affidavit. They don't have any of those things. So how can they apply a warrant against the person in a county? The sheriff should be there, hey, take a hike, get out of here.
Hey, imagine if all the new sheriffs that went to Quantico went there and laid the law down. They're going to their school and they go, well, listen, I want to let you boys know, before you come in my county, you have to check with me. I'm
That's
the top
right.
law enforcement guy. I mean,
every sheriff should notify the feds at some
point. Right. Well, do it right at the school. Hey, I know you're teaching me, but let me teach you something. Don't come in my county without calling me.
But even if they don't teach them, they should notify the federal government and say, hey, listen, anytime you come into my county, check with me first.
Right.
See you then. Okay? And if they break that rule, arrest them. Arrest them. Look, this is their job to stop these people from overreaching their powers and abusing the people. And not just on a federal level, on the state level, too. And, of course, on the county level, the towns, the villages, and so on. Look, they need to be there to make sure that the law is being applied, and that law is the Constitution. It's the rights of the people to protect the unalienable rights of we the people, and thereby themselves too. All right, look, with that, we're going to move on. There's no announcements. Just a note for next week. I'm going to try to focus in maybe 20 minutes of looking at something, and then maybe 20 minutes of trying to get an open forum just speaking on that subject matter. Not spending too much time because we have other things going on. We have Brent that teaches and talks, and we have Gerard. So I don't want to absorb too much time, but I do want to try to focus more towards teaching and or revealing different things, hopefully get some conversations going about it and questions, comments, and maybe even corrections. So next week I'm going to be looking at the pocket handbook for the, well, not pocket handbook, it's 8.5 by 11, so... But it's a PDF copy of, we're going to look at the Jurist Handbook. I really do believe it's powerful. There is some redundancy. I was looking at it today, and there's some redundancy. I'm thinking of taking the redundancy out, but then on the other hand, maybe not. It's good to repeat things. And sometimes you're giving information from a different perspective, and maybe that which is being redundant that I've said earlier in the book is said again, mostly to reinforce maybe the point or the position that's being made later on in the booklet. So with that, for that purpose, I think we'll leave the redundancy in there. And again, the more and more we hear something, the more and more it sinks into our thick skulls. You know, anything that we learn and do, you know, as we dive into the subject matter, learn the lingo and become more and more familiar, all of a sudden it starts to spill out of our mouths and we don't even realize, well, where did that come from? So we absorb it because that's the nature of the way the brain works, the mind works, and so on. Okay, so that's what we're going to do next week. I'm going to try to focus in 20 minutes on a subject matter and maybe 20 minutes open forum on that subject matter and then move over to Brent and Gerard and so on. But right now we're going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you still here with us?
No, his computer is shutting down, and he's trying to get back in. So I'm
okay. Well, I'll pass things over to Gerard, and I'll hang out for a little while longer, participating somewhat. And maybe when Brent comes in, let Gerard know, and he'll give him some time on the mic. Gerard, you got the controls? Or did he fall out too? Well, maybe he's on the phone or had to take a break for something. Meanwhile, I'll start the questions, the Q&A.
I'm sorry. Wait.
There you go. Okay.
Wait a minute. I forgot to unmute myself. I just wasted all that breath.
Yep, you're yelling at us.
I have a current event things that all our members need to know. This is what's coming down the pike here in the next couple of weeks, days, months. I have no idea. I'm hoping that it gets that the tide gets stemmed, but they're going at it with a vengeance. There's a very, very good video out by Naomi Wolf, and she talks about this vaccine passport.
Yeah, drop that into my Skype, because I like
she
listening
said,
to her.
If they issue this vaccine passport, our liberty is done. She said, essentially, it's the same technology, and she's a technologist. Naomi Wolf is a, she runs a tech firm that she started herself. She's the CEO of her own tech firm, so she knows what she's talking about. She's been around a lot of years. I bought her book early on when I was fighting the federal government, and she wrote a book called I Am Not a Number, and something like Let Me Know When the Revolution Starts or something. She was, you know, when all those books were going around, you know, that Peterson that was doing the, you know, he got arrested eventually, him and his wife, but he was very good. Anyway, Naomi Wolf tells why this technology is going to turn us into China 2.0. That it is a social credit system, that they'll know everything you're doing, everybody you're with will be tracked, traced, and that's the end of life as we know it. And you know these things, once you put them in, they're very hard to get rid of, and they're all pushing for it. And so we should resist that almost to the death. I'm not kidding you. It's that bad. We should not ever let them implement it. And I don't know what we're gonna go downhill real fast if they're already implementing it. They've implemented it in Israel. It's, you know, there's places out in Europe and that you don't go get a cup of coffee without you scanning that thing. And once you scan that thing, they know everything about you. They know who you're with and when you were there. And then if you say something or do something wrong, they cut off your money. See, they want to go to this digital currency. They want to do just what China did, like with social credits. So every time you either talk against or say something wrong, they knock down your social credit, and your card doesn't work in more and more places. And pretty soon, you can't buy or you can't sell, and hence the biblical thing about the mark. And so just beware and keep watch. And, you know, if we have to go out in the streets eventually, that's what we have to do.
Well, but this is where the sheriff comes in.
Absolutely, and that's one of the first things we should be telling the sheriffs, that you should not enforce this whole COVID belong. And there's more reasons. I don't want to even get into the COVID thing because it's such a lie. It's not even funny. There's no such thing as COVID. I don't care if they're listening or not listening. They've got that thing dialed up for the flu, influenza A and B, and that's how they're running these numbers up. And right now they're saying, oh, there was 55,000 cases. They're using the PCR test that the CDC said you can no longer use after December 31st. Why after December 31st? Because they hope they get it all done by then. That's their date. That lets you know that they're planning on doing all this crap before December 31st, because they came out and they admitted, because scientists and that Heimlich Fulmer, he's proven that that's a baloney test. It tests pawpaws. It tests goats. And it says they all have COVID. So it's a lie from hell, but they're still going to rely on it just to get us to take the last step to put us under slavery. We need to resist with every ounce of our breath and energy that they don't implement this, whatever we got to do. So I'm just making you aware of it. John, I'll send you that thing from Naomi. We should put that on the site because she's very, very articulate. She's very good.
I dropped it into my Skype. I'll take a look. Yeah. The problem I'm having is I still can't post videos. I only was able to do YouTube, and YouTube is worthless now. You don't get any good videos anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if you get this on YouTube because they don't like her. Her stuff, it has to be like BitChute or what's the other one there?
Well, again, I don't know how to imprint them into a website. I've been trying for months, and I just can't figure it out. So,
yeah,
Anybody knows how to do that, let me know.
I think Ollie might know. But...
You know, look at, they shut one of our sites down. We had lots and lots and lots and lots of videos for the last 12 or 15 years. I've been posting videos, and they shut that site down.
It's going to get worse because that's all they got. They're with a vengeance because people are waking up, and so it's they're like a cornered animal. So they're gonna viciously censor and viciously go after people now because they see they know that the people are, you know, there is a light at the end of our tunnel, which scares them.
Well, this is why people need to be working with the sheriff, and they need to follow the protocol that we've laid out to connect with the sheriff. You need to start committees of safety. You need to get enough people in the community active and doing this, and you approach the sheriff. And then some of these questions you need to ask the sheriff. I mean, we've already asked, I already asked my sheriff with other people. We went up there to see the sheriff. I haven't talked with him about the shot yet, but that's why I do want to go see him about that. But about the guns, you know, when they were going to try to take our weapons away from us here in New York. And we asked him, you know, hey, you know, what are you going to do when they come to do that? If I call you, you're coming. And he says, yeah, just call me. So, you see, it's up to the sheriff. The sheriff can come out, you know, put your sheriff, first make your connection with sheriff, get your committees of safety going, put your sheriff on speed dial. Because when you get pulled over by a cop that's doing the wrong thing, or they try to push something upon you, like let's say they do push this thing, we're trying to put a needle in your arm or something, you can speed dial your sheriff and have your sheriff come out to protect you. Because that's his job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But, you know, do you have to know you have to know about natural law. You have to know the law. You have to know your rights, and you have to know you need to be protected of those rights. And the sheriff needs to know this, too, and they need to have the backbone and the power, and they get that through knowledge. They will build a backbone, and they will build power up through knowledge. Knowledge is power. We've all heard that statement. Knowledge is power. Okay, with that, I'm going to...
I see Brent's in here. Cody, I'm going to pick you first. You've been in there forever. Let me unmute Brent and let him go first, and then I'll get to you, okay?
Yeah, I'll introduce Brent, and then I'll pass the board over to you. Did you unmute him? Make sure he's here. There he is.
No, he's unmuted. Ooh, I don't know. He
jumped up
there
for a second. There he is.
There he is.
Brent,
can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm on the phone, but I'm sure.
We can hear you. All right, we're going to pass things over to you, Brent. This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the board. Can you dial us at Gerard? You got the board? Gerard, you got to unmute yourself.
Am I coming across?
Yeah, you are, but I want to hear Gerard.
Yeah, no, I got myself muted, so you don't.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brent. Good to see you. Brent?
Go ahead, Brent. You got the floor.
Or at least the mic.
Got the mic.
The phone.
Did we lose him again?
No. I see him, but I don't hear him.
I think he's on his cell phone. Maybe that's why. Brent, chime in any.
Are you traveling, Brent? I heard him.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. It sounds like a Verizon phone call.
Okay, I'll try this.
Okay. You got it.
We're talking about, of course, in the midst of all this madness, I never thought I'd see things get so crazy. I never thought I'd see so many Americans put their brains in a 5-gallon bucket and fire a slug into it. That's what we're seeing. I can pile up examples. You say, well, Brent, do you think you're the smartest man and you're the only one that isn't stupid like 99% of the Americans? I don't know. I just know I'm not going along with it. I meet a few other people that agree with me. Matter of fact, I'm meeting a lot. That's the odd thing about this, isn't it? So what's the answer? Well, the answer is that no matter how bad it gets, none of us have lost our responsibility as members of Adam's race to do right. And no man has a right to do wrong. No man has a right to do wrong. Well, I think that sums it up. Of course, it would take a little expounding to explain that. But I still say no man has a right to do wrong. I don't care who you are. And if you're going along with this stupidity, you're part of the problem. And when they go down, you'll go down, just as sure as sunshine. So the answer is, of course, you do right, stand fast, don't budge, do not consent to wrong. Do not consent to wrong. Be encouraged. There's great joy in it. So it comes back to what's local. We were talking about the sheriff last Monday night, and I want to continue. I'm trying to see where I left off. We're going to teach a course on the sheriff, starting on the 9th of September. And if you want to join the class, go to commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And the material I'm going over here on Monday nights is a preview of some of that. No able-bodied adult man can become a member of the posse of his county any more than he can become a member of his state's militia. Oh, wait a minute. I might say something worthwhile. I'm going to record this. You never know. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but here goes. So I get to read that again just so I can get it recorded. No able-bodied man can become a member of the posse of his county any more than he can become a member of his state's militia. Indeed, each able-bodied adult male is a member of his county's posse and of his state militia by operation of law. It is not a choice. It is not his choice, I should say. It is the law's choice. It's not your mother's choice. It's the law's choice. And if the sheriff in your county summons you and says, I need your help, come here right now, and you refuse, then you're guilty of a crime. And in every state, it may be a little different, but nonetheless, it's a crime. So that's what we mean when we say, by operation of the law. It isn't that you volunteered for it. You may have volunteered, you may have not volunteered, but it's your duty. If the sheriff calls you, you're a member of the posse. That's the law in America. Every place where there's a sheriff. The only places I know where there isn't a sheriff is Connecticut, Alaska, two other places where sheriffs are castrated of any real authority as sheriff. That's Pennsylvania and Hawaii. Hawaii. Sheriffs in name only with some nominal duties. Well, the sheriff has posse comitatus authority to call forth armed men to help keep the law's peace. And this authority is rooted deep in our Anglo-American common law government. Its origins are traceable to the 9th century A.D. They are traceable further back, but after the 9th century going back, the roots of the sheriff in our Anglo-American common law tradition, the roots are lost in the fog of antiquity. Nevertheless, the posse comitatus, that's Latin, it means posse, means possibility, it means potential, it means ableness, the potential power of the county, latent, not patent, there, but not yet shown, posse thrives in the 21st century United States, and American sheriffs use their posse comitatus, power of the county authority, often in America, even daily. And the power of the posse belongs to the county sheriff. To be sure, the first official recognition of the power intended, the posse, was for the sheriff's use, and the sheriff remains the user of the posse. That is according to the law. This is not theory. This is not some conspiracy theory. No, this is the law in America. The Anglo-Saxon office called sheriff is the foundation for the American sheriff's role as a constitutional officer. Constitutional officer. What does that mean? I'm going to look ahead here. I think, well, the sheriff is a constitutional office not because the Constitution of the United States mentions the sheriff. It doesn't. The Constitution of the United States does not mention the sheriff. Then why do we call it a constitutional office? Well, for a number of reasons. Number one, it is the duty of the sheriff, to ensure that the Constitution of the United States is adhered to in his county. Well, that's every office of every government official in America, state or federal, from the lowliest private in the United States Army and the lowliest seaman deuce in the U.S. Army or the U.S. Navy, takes the same oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Every juror, everybody that's sworn into office, state and federal in America, our Constitution requires to swear their allegiance to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Well, in that sense, the county sheriff is a constitutional officer because he's constitutional in what he does. Second, he's a constitutional officer because our Constitution, as Americans, comes in two forms. You say, well, how's that? Well, it comes in the form of the Constitution of the United States, the written form, and it comes in the unwritten form. The unwritten form, I like to stress this because on the 14th of October, in the year 1774, the first Congress of the United States, assembled at Annapolis, Maryland, drafted a letter to send to the Crown of England. And in that letter, they said, we demand the rights of our Constitution. I said 74, it might have been 75, but I remember it was the 14th of October. And they said, we demand the rights of our Constitution. And they wrote it out with a little C on the Constitution. What does that mean, our Constitution? Constitution of the United States wasn't even contemplated yet. It would be another 12 years before the Constitution was even attempted to be drafted. But they said, we demand the rights of our Constitution. Well, what were they talking about? Well, they were talking about the Constitution of Britain, the Constitution of England. Their constitution as English, British, I should say, freemen here in the American colonies. Well, what was that constitution? It is our common law. We demand the rights of our constitution. In England yet today, they'll tell you, do you have a constitution? Oh, yeah, we have the English constitution. Well, where is it? Well, it isn't anywhere. You can't see it. What do you mean you can't see it? Well, it's our common law. That is our constitution. Our courts recognize it, have for centuries. So a sheriff is a constitutional sheriff in the sense that his office is an office at common law. It is a part of our common law, traceable again back to the 9th century and even beyond that, but clearly traceable. Why isn't it traceable beyond the 9th century, the reign of Alfred the Great, King of England? Why isn't it clearly traceable back of that? Well, one of the main reasons is because English wasn't ever put to writing. Nobody ever tried to reduce English to writing. They just spoke it. Never wrote it. Well, King Alfred said he wanted the Bible written in English so that his people could read it. That's what he said. So him and his Welsh scribe, Asher, got together, and Asher, being a very much a Christian man, he'd been to school, he'd learned Latin. Latin was what everybody wrote. So he took the Latin letters, the letters of the Latin alphabet, being a cleric, that means being a churchman, and he put the sounds of those letters and those letters to English, and he invented what we call written English. So that's why we say we can't trace it clearly after King Alfred, because it wasn't written down, but we can trace it. Oh, yeah, it goes back. It goes back. There are mentions of it here and there, but it comes real strong at the time of King Alfred, and that was in the 800s, the reign from the year 850 A.D. to the year 899 A.D., No, that's the years he lived. No. He lived from 849 A.D. to 899. How do I remember that? Because he died at age 50. And he died in 899 A.D. So his reign, after he got to be a man, was from the, I think it was 874, something like that. Well, at any rate, got English in writing, and it's clear during his reign what, and our American sheriff is hardly different at all. Hardly different at all from the sheriff during the time of King Alfred. Now, in England, after the year 1066, the sheriff changed, and the Americans attempted to reestablish the office of sheriff as it stood in Anglo-Saxon England before 1066. Well, the Anglo-Saxon office called sheriff is the foundation of the American sheriff's role as a constitutional officer by the people's direct choosing. You see, the people in England, in Anglo-Saxon England, excuse me, before the Norman invasion, chose their own sheriff. Remember, the sheriff is a county officer, and the county chooses him, not the king. Well, after the Norman invasion, the king appointed the sheriff in each county. Of course, if the king is going to appoint the sheriff is dependent upon him for his appointment, his position, his prestige, and most importantly, his pay. Well, that's not the way it was in Anglo-Saxon England, and that's not the way it is here in America. No, the sheriff answers to the people. He doesn't answer to anybody else. He doesn't answer to the president of the United States. In fact, the case of Prince versus the United States says that no officer of the federal government has any authority to commandeer, that is, command the sheriff what to do. In fact, no officer of the federal government, according to that case of the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia writing, no officer of the federal government, no employee of the federal government, has any authority whatsoever to commandeer any officer of state government. Oh, if I had it to do over, the lessons I've learned. I've been at places where the feds have busted in without a warrant, dominated people at gunpoint, and I protested, and I was younger then and ignorant. I protested to them when the people would call me to help, but I didn't call the sheriff. I didn't call the sheriff. If I'd have called the sheriff, I'd have said to the sheriff, "Sheriff, stop this madness. They can't tell you what to do. All they can do is shoot you. That's all they can do to you. The law says they can't tell you what to do, and the law also says, by the way, they're not supposed to shoot you. Of course, when people have power, no telling. But if I had it to do over, I would do that consistently, and that's what everyone should do. Call your sheriff first if you're being abused by the federal government, or think you are. At least the sheriff should be there to ride herd on them, even if he chooses not to stop them. He may say, well, they're within their rights to do what they're doing. Well, he'll just stay there and do a standby for you. But police chiefs are appointed to their place within the chain of command of a city government. The sheriff, by contrast, is autonomous from the inner chains of delegated or redelegated authority. He is autonomous from inner chains, chains, of delegated and redelegated authority of, for instance, federal officers and state officers. Our common law and history of the posse from King Alfred's Anglo-Saxon times to the present defines the office of sheriff. And at bottom, our posse comitatus law of the 21st century United States is the same as that of King Alfred's 9th century England. And now, as then, I just went off. No, I'm here. I see what happened. You should be able to hear me. Now as then, the sheriff, in carrying out his peacekeeping duties, can summon to his aid every able-bodied grown male of the county. And his discretion about whom to summon and how the person summoned shall be armed or otherwise outfitted remains unfettered. That's his choice. American posses have thwarted criminal escapes in America up till the very present time. And the posse is also its county's regular volunteer corps, assisting the sheriff during county fairs, tornadoes and floods, robberies, hostage situations, among many other duties. Some posses are well trained, providing armed help to the sheriffs as needed. And our common law lays bare the relationship between the posse and the Fourth Militia Clause of our Constitution, called the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment fosters, as you can recall its language, fosters a well-regulated militia. And in furtherance of this purpose, it is our duty, in support of our law of the land, to keep, to safeguard the right, that is the duty of the people, that is the militia, to keep and bear arms. Don't think for a minute that any of these officers of government that have taken that oath to support and defend the Constitution, don't think for a minute they have a clue and could ever define and tell you what an oath even is, much less pay attention to what their duty is. And don't think for a minute that you don't have the same duty as someone living here within the territorial boundaries of the United States. I don't care what you think your status is. If you're here, you're under the protection of our traditions, and you owe a duty of loyalty to the Constitution. I had a fella tell me recently that just being born on the land isn't enough for citizenship. It's a matter of blood. Nothing could be more false in America. No, it's born on the land here. It's born on the land. As far as I know, I haven't checked every country, but I remember reading this years ago and following up on it some. As far as I know, America and the other four major common law countries of the world are the only countries in the world where your citizenship doesn't have anything to do with who your ancestors are. Your citizenship has nothing to do with who your ancestors are. It has everything to do with what land you were born on. It's called the free soil doctrine of our common law. It was very much in the forefront of debate and discussion just before American states went to war with each other. And the non-slave states, many of them were saying, if a slave comes to our state, it's free soil. You put your foot on it, and whatever your former condition of servitude was, your chains fall off, as it were, and you are ipso.
Some buzzing noise interference.
That's me. My mic is acting up.
I can hear you, but it looks like Brent has dropped off, maybe dropped his call. And if Brent's listening, he should dial back in. Let's see.
I see him coming back in now.
All right. Give a Yahoo hello, Brent, when you get in there. I don't see that you're in yet. There you are.
Hello?
There you go. Okay. You can resume whenever you're ready.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, thank you, Gerard. Oh, well, at any rate, I'll resume. I'm about done anyway. I was just saying, I think I was saying, that the free soil doctrine is real. It's always been real. It's part of our tradition. And if that doctrine is the doctrine that was the chief point of debate between Abraham Lincoln and Judge Douglas, in the series of debates that they engaged in throughout the state of Illinois in the year 1858, when those two men were running for the United States Senate, and they had to convince the state legislature, of course, that's what the Constitution says, to choose them as senator, one or the other. And in order to do that, they had to whip up support throughout the state. Kansas was seeking admission into the Union under the free soil doctrine, and Missouri was saying there is no free soil doctrine. Well, that was one of the fallacies of what happened in those days. And the free soil doctrine still applies here in the United States. And wherever you are, if you're on the land that belongs to God, and I don't know of any land that doesn't belong to God, God says, you're on my land, I don't allow slavery on my land. That's the free soil doctrine. And that's where it comes from. Well, because slavery is bondage. Bondage means you can't get up and go where you want to go. You can't have bodily locomotion when you want to have it, when the urge hits you. You can't go where you want to go. That's called false imprisonment, the common law. We believe it's such an ugly thing. We believe it's so contrary to what God wants that we've even put a piece of legislative remedy to it. Parliament passed what's called the Habeas Corpus Act in order to help us ensure that people aren't bound to a boundary. They're not falsely imprisoned unlawfully. Well, that comes back to free soil doctrine. Well, back to the quickly here. See how many minutes I've got left. Try to gauge myself. Well, not too many. I probably ought to stop here. It's been a good 20 minutes, Gerard, so I'll pull up stakes and turn it back to you.
Okay. Let me get to... All right, we got a few people in the queue. I'm going to unmute Cody because he's been there a long time, patiently waiting. So, Cody, go ahead. Yeah. You've been unmuted.
Good evening. Is John still on? Or?
I don't know if he's still listening or not, but go ahead and say what you want to say.
Maybe somebody can send him a message then. I believe I sent a check last year almost right away when he announced that book for two books. And I don't believe I told him to send one to a sheriff or anything. But I haven't got any books, so I wanted to check and see if there's, you know, if I'm getting some books, or I might direct one to a sheriff anyway if he wants to get in contact with me if he hasn't sent them out yet. Kind of wanted to find out that. I guess it's kind of my main thing. I was going to try to get with John because I sent his email on something else and didn't know if he got it. So
your question is go ahead, repeat it again because I couldn't.
My
headphone.
I sent a check for two books way last year, like when he first announced it, and I haven't got any books. And I'm pretty sure I directed both of the books to be sent to me and none to the sheriffs. So.
Okay, so that's Cody. Which state are you in, Cody?
Illinois? Yeah.
All right, I think, Jan's not here tonight, but what we'll do is we'll try to get that message to Jan to get it to John. And if I can remember, I'll tell him also.
Okay.
To get a hold of you, see what the status of your books are. You got two of them, and you didn't think that you sent either one to a sheriff. So you should have got two books, technically, right?
Yeah, I should have got, yeah. I know I would have got at least one, And,
right.
But he can send me an email. I may go ahead and just send one to the sheriff right away. Too.
Right.
And so he had sent 100 books out or something. I was like, man, I'm surprised I hadn't got mine when I know I sent him a check away last year when he first announced
it.
Well,
we'll track it down, Cody, and see if we can't figure out what's going on.
Sounds good. So, thank you.
Yeah. And,
appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Cody. Appreciate that. Thanks for buying.
Yep.
Thanks for your support.
Yep.
Okay.
No,
yeah. Okay. Next one is California Fred. How you doing, California Fred? Haven't heard from you in a little while.
Hello, Gerard. Can you hear me?
I can. Wall to wall.
Am I getting too much backbeat from my speakers?
No, I can't. I don't see that.
Good. My questions are kind of simplistic. I don't understand what we can do with the common law against these corporations that are mandating get the vaccine or we'll fire you, or they want to check your passport that's coming before you can shop for food. How do we address these issues on a local level with our sheriff, if possible?
And that's the only way you're going to address it is with your sheriff. So you got to make sure that your sheriff understands that this is unconstitutional. And it's wrong on so many different levels. Of course, you know, now they're rushing to give approval. So, first of all, they cannot enforce an experimental vaccine. That's going to put them in the Nuremberg trials, basically, because that's what the Nazis did, and that's what they're doing. And anybody that was lost their job or was told that they quit their job because they were coerced, that's a lawsuit right now. They're going to push this approval from the FDA through, which I think it went through today, if I'm not mistaken, which means it's approved, which means it's not experimental, and that's a lie because they have completely overlooked all the deaths and all the destruction that it's done, and they're just approving it. So obviously they're committing crimes and treason, and there's a couple of lawsuits out there. And if that's the case, I would hook up, you know, that Heinrich Fulmer, the German lawyer that sued Deutsche Bank and Volkswagen and all them. He's hot on them. He has 1,000 lawyers and 10,000 health officials that have given testimony as to the fallacy and the crime of this vaccination. So they're going to be in trouble. And I would go to him or one of the other ones that have these suits and sign up on that suit. And, you know, you might want to give them a notice of liability besides that, because it's not just the corporation that's doing this. It's the people in the corporation that enforce it, because these are crimes against humanity. And just like in Nuremberg, those soldiers that were just following orders, that was their defense. Well, we were just following orders by shooting those unarmed prisoners. They said, no, no, no. You don't just follow orders when you're told to do something against, you know, humanity like that. You should know better, and you should have refused that order. They weren't escaping or anything. You put them up against the wall and shot them. You know, they're under the Geneva Convention or whatever. They were not even enemy combatants as far as that goes. Some of them were innocent, you know, women and children. So you don't get to shoot innocent women and children just to get rid of them. That's a crime against humanity, and you get hung by the neck. And those soldiers did get hung by the neck. And every healthcare worker that sticks this needle in somebody, technically speaking, they're committing a crime too. The law says that they're supposed to give informed consent. Well, how can they give informed consent when the package insert that comes with the vaccine is set, it's blank, and it says left intentionally blank? Go to your pharmacist and ask him for the package insert. A lot of them don't want to give it to you, but I got to know a couple people that were able to go in and get it, and it says left intentionally blank. That's a crime. How they cannot, you know, I don't even know how the FDA can approve this and say that, oh, we approve it now, without putting a package insert in there. Now they have to have a package insert that has the ingredients, And then what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to tell you that there's, graphene oxide or something. That's a deadly poison. That's what's killing everybody. They got to list it in there. So they are wrong on so many levels. Look, at knowledge is power. If you educate yourself onto what these shots are and what they're talking about, they're totally off the wall. So that's what I can tell you. And I would resist to the death with this, because it's that important. And they already have very eminent scientists and doctors that have come out and said that if you get this jab, that you're going to, that people are going to die anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and some of them say, depending on when you got it, how many you got, you may go 10 years, but you're going to be sick every one of those 10 years. And they're always going to have a new booster shot for you too. And the more you take, the quicker you'll die. That's a fact. And I don't care if they like it or they don't like it. You know, they think they're going to come out after me for telling the truth, because that's what they do. They don't like the truth, you know. So all I can tell you, Fred, is I would resist, and I would send notices of liability to everybody, including my superior, but also to the CEOs of the corporation, and let them know that there's going to be a price to pay for all this. And believe me, there will be. Anyway.
One little follow-up thing here. Granted, these people are going to drag it through the courts, and it'll drag on for a couple years, and then they'll appeal it for another couple years. What about grand juries investigating these people and putting them on trial for their lives?
It's happening right now. It's happening.
That's good.
What's that?
Fauci got indicted.
Well, I think that he got indicted with a common law grand jury. I don't think that was a county grand jury. I don't know. We have to look into who they were, but it's all over the news. So, look at if you know, we do indictments and they ignore us. You know, if they didn't ignore us, our indictments are just as valid as anybody else's indictments. You know, but yes, they look. You know. First of all, you know, just because you get indicted, you still got to go through a trial, Fred. They can't not give you your due process. And I don't believe that it's going to drag out the way it has traditionally, because I don't believe that they're going to have the right to pull all that stuff in. As a matter of fact, a lot of them are going to be tried by military tribunals where they don't get all that baloney that they would get in a normal court, because the higher up ones basically have committed treason, and right now the government is under duress. They basically put an imposter in. So there's going to be a period of time when this is going to be a military action, these trials, and it's going to be done on a military tribunal. And of course that's going to be mainly the more higher ups that should have known better. The other people, they're gonna probably get a regular trial, and they're gonna be able to appeal whatever they can appeal. But I don't think that we the people and the judges at that point are gonna put up with any baloney, you know, because the people are sick of it, and so they're not gonna let them, you know. It's up to us to make sure that when we come on the other side of this, that who's ever left in those seats as judges, that they adjudicate according to the common law. And under the common law, for every injury, there's a remedy. And one of the injuries is a speedy trial. You have to, you know, on both sides. So, anyway.
In a military tribunal, they really don't care why you did it. The simple question is, did you or did you not do it? And then from there in, it's, we're
going to
gavel and hang them.
You're right, because most crime, they have to prove intent. You know what I mean? In other words, if you didn't have intent, they can't convict you of first-degree murder, I guess. So I understand what you're saying. It's just, it doesn't have the high standards that we do with a jury of your peers, okay? And so it's quicker, it's very much more cut and dried. I don't know what all the differences are. But I do know that it's very much, you know, because military tribunals, they're done under a time of war and time of duress, and they're very much straight and to the point. And, you know, I mean, you do get a lawyer, you do get to defend yourself, but you're going to get a JAG lawyer. You know what I mean? So, I got a note here, Stoley today, when given the option to take the jab or be fired, employees should not quit. That's right. Their unemployment benefits will be denied and make the employer fire the employee. Yeah, I would get that in writing, that you didn't just walk out, they forced you. Because that's going to, anybody that loses their job because they were coerced, let them give you that pink slip. Don't run out all pissed off. Let them push you out, basically. That's what they're saying. Because that's a very big legal hurdle there. So make sure that they say, nope. And a lot of them are afraid, are going to understand as this goes on, the bosses are not going to want to fire you. I'm telling you what's going to go on. They're going to lose the stomach for it because they don't have a stomach to begin with. They're all a bunch of cowards. When they realize that we the people are awake and there's consequences to this, the whole bottom's going to drop out of it. You may not even have to worry about it because there's so much stuff going on now. As much as they're using scare tactics, oh, by next month you can't go to school, you can't do this. That's good. Keep saying that because we're gonna record your words, and that's part of the thing we're gonna hang you with. Make sure you get on the news and tell everybody how you're supporting this vaccination and how you're requiring it in order for anybody to go to your university or your hospital or whatever. Those people will be on the front lines of the punishment because they should know better.
What about the people that just want to go shopping for food and you don't have your IDs and shit like that? Do you use the sheriff to go in and get your food?
Well, you know, look, I don't know how bad it's going to get with that. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a sheriff in a county that has the communities to do that, if you got a sheriff in a county that has the communities to do that, guess what? They're not going to be enforcing them with IDs anyway because they're unconstitutional. And the sheriff's going to stop right there. You know what I mean? I don't think that if you've got a constitutional sheriff, that it's going to be necessary for him to go in the store with you, because I think that they're going to have the word that if you enforce this, we're arresting you. I mean, that would be the best situation, that it stops. You know, you got to stop it at the county level. No, those IDs are not valid here. We're not using them. You know, and this whole baloney about, you know, they're acting like there's an infection out there, and guess what? It's just influenza A and influenza B. They don't even have COVID, basically, what do I want to say, isolated so that they could use it as a measure of the test. Now, don't get me wrong. There is COVID-19 because it was created in a lab. There absolutely is COVID-19, and it is a little bit more aggressive than influenza A and B, but it's still for the general population. If you don't have any serious illness and you're not obese and you're not, you know, 80 years old, it still has a 98.99% chance of recovery. There's no reason to be doing this baloney with this little thing. And it is gonna run out with herd immunity. The problem is they've created a vaccine that is a bioweapon, and that spike protein that they put in is more deadly than the COVID-19, more deadly, and people are shedding that, and they're infecting people that haven't had any vaccines. And the thing that you don't know and what they don't tell you is Israel has the most people vaccinated in the world as a percentage for a country, and guess what? What they're not telling you is 98% of the people that are going to the hospital have already been vaccinated. They have buried that fact. And that's the truth. They're going to the hospital because the spike protein is killing them. And they don't want people to know this. It's going to come out. They're not going to be able to keep it quiet much longer. So hopefully it comes out sooner rather than later.
Gerard, there's one little thing I'd like to add. Brent Winters covered the fact that we are automatically members of the militia and the sheriff's posse. Mm-hmm. You're a prosecutor. That when they ask for your papers, you shove a card in their face, giving you the authority to do what you're doing.
I don't understand.
Well, we're automatically members of the militia and mm-hmm. the sheriff's police. There should be an ID card that you shove in their face that you're going to support constitutional remedy and these rules don't apply to you.
Well, first of all, you don't join the militia, so there's no membership card because we're already in it. By virtue of your birthright, you're in it. Now, if the guy that's enforcing it doesn't know that, that's his problem. But I would tell him, listen, I live according to the Constitution. I have inalienable rights from God, from no place else, and the Constitution tells you about them. And if you're going to use deadly force on me, I have the right to use it back on you. But I'll tell you what, if you're going to do that, you want to make sure that you got more than one person with a gun standing there in their face, because they're not used to that, and they won't want that. And I know it sounds radical, but that's, you know, you either run and hide, you know, he who fights and runs away lives to fight another day. You have to pick your battles. You certainly don't want to go out there and try to defend the whole thing as a one-man army. I don't think it's going to be necessary. I think by the time it gets to that point, I don't think they're going to go door-to-door ever. I don't think that's ever going to happen, because that's going to make a revolution. They won't make three houses, and they'll be wiped out, and then they're going to end up having to bring in foreign troops, because I don't believe that American troops are going to do that to their own people. I think they're going to lose stomach for it real fast. So hopefully we don't have to discuss all this horrible stuff, that it will peter out before then, I'm hoping, you know, and praying. So I don't know what else to say. Well, you know, look at Fred, you got to roll with the punches. And at some point, you got to know when to pull the trigger. You know what I mean? So, all right. Well, no, enough said. I don't like to discuss that stuff, because they'll say, oh, look, you're planning a revolution. Look at the Second Amendment is not so that we can go hunting. The Second Amendment is so that you can hunt treasonous officials. That's what it's for. It's got nothing to do with deer or elk or moose hunting. So just by virtue of what it is, you know, it's just like treason. The penalty for treason is death. I didn't make it up. It's in the code. I'm not threatening to kill you. I'm telling you that we're going to hold you to the fullest extent of the law. And if what you're doing is treasonous, you should know that you're going to get hung by the neck until you're dead. I didn't make it up. It's in the code. Go read the code. I've had people accuse me of making threats. I didn't. All I said is, you better be careful, because you're violating something that is treasonous, and that could mean the death penalty for you. So if you really want to do that, go ahead and do it. But look, I want to move over. We got lots of people, and it's getting late.
Thank you for being generous with your time. I'm sorry I hogged the space. Bye.
Nah, that's okay. Good hearing from you again, Fred. I have... looks like Amy. Should put my glasses on. Okay, Amy, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So I just wanted to ask a follow-up question with regard to the UCC 11 search in Albany. So I've kind of gotten the runaround, so I've paid for the search three times, and I still don't have it. So I reached out to three different New York Assembly members to try and get help. So I'm not sure what else I can do to apply a political pressure, you know, to get.
I'm not sure I know what you're doing. You're looking to get what? A UCC what?
So a UCC 11 search in Albany, I guess, is the official record, but it's been obscured because they took the whole thing down off their website, and from what I've experienced, I'm getting the runaround. It's like a FOIA request.
Right, but what's a UCC 11 tell you about?
It's like a search of the official record, so...
which they now they call that FOIA request.
Yeah, so they even took the whole thing off their website. You have to go to a third party to get the form, the UCC 11 form. And now, as I can find out, through experience, I'm getting the runaround to get actually the search back, even though I've paid for it three times. So this is with regard to the lien on my house, the apartment I was trying to sell in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Probably any of the officials you talk to have not a clue what you're talking about.
Well, I think they know because there's one gal who specifically is assigned to UCC 11 searches, but...
Well, that I would think more there would be a judge or somebody like that, and maybe, like you say, a clerk in a court that does those things. But when you go to your congressmen and senators and your representatives and stuff, I think they're just as clueless as the next guy, to be honest
with
you.
Well, I've used them in the past several years ago, when I had, I can't remember my situation, but I think I was in a hardship situation,
mm-hmm.
and they levied my bank account, and I was able to, through the assemblyman, get the ombudsman, and they put the money back in my account.
So, yeah, that's good.
I mean, I've had experience where the assemblymen have helped. But I don't know, they fired that guy shortly after that.
You got him fired.
So I don't know where he went, but...
He went in a deep hole somewhere. Look, they don't want to let this stuff out, I'm going to tell you. The FOIA request sounded like it was something really good. You can get this information the government doesn't want to give you. What I found when I went into office for my short term that I did is they turned it into something... as a roadblock, because it says you have so many days to answer them, and then it gives them it gives the officials all these reasons to duck you. And I'm telling you right now, they don't just automatically give it to you. They run you out to the end of the 13 days, and then they go down, and then they got all the excuses are built into that law so that they don't have to give you the information, and they can stretch it out as long as they can. When people came in to the clerk's office and they wanted to know something, her first thing was file a FOIA request. And I told them, I had a meeting, and I said, the FOIA request was not designed to be a stumbling block for the citizens. It's supposed to be a help to get information. I said, when somebody comes into the clerk's office and they want information, you should give it to them. And the only thing is if it's personal information on an employee, that has to be redacted. So we have legal departments. We got, you know, all this money that the taxpayers spend, but there's no 99% of what people are FOIA requesting is public knowledge anyway. And you should not have to wait 15, 30 days.
Well, this is
like
a certified copy, which is supposed to be the evidence I would need to prove mm-hmm. that the New York City Registrar fraudulently recorded a notice of lien as a lien. But so I think that
they probably know that. That's why you're paying hell to get that.
It's becoming more apparent that
right.
people possibly are involved in the cover up. Is
right,
That's the scratch and sniff test that through experience. That's what it looks like from
you were able to get it because you had a politician that sided with you and twisted their arm. And so the ombudsman put the money back in, but that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, that guy, he was really helpful, but now I think it's this young gal, and I don't know if she has a clue, but we'll see. But
I don't know, but you know what? You're gonna have to try to educate them somehow. Now, some of them may be educated, and they're just playing, you know, sly like a fox. I don't know, but you got an uphill battle there. You know, if they don't answer you and they do, you know, they put in roadblocks and stuff to do their duty, they're liable. Give them a notice of liability. You're going to sue them for the things that they're doing to your due process right. That's due process, you know.
Okay.
And that could actually be brought up into a federal court, you know. And that's probably what I would do. If they don't cooperate, I would put them down as a defendant and take it to, you know, as a violation of my due process rights. I don't know. Maybe Brent's got a different take on that. You know, I know, you know, it's not a trial, but it's still, you know, when you go in and you file paperwork, it's a process. And if they're going to stop the process, you know, they're going to tell you, oh, no, this doesn't violate your rights. This is municipal law, blah, blah, blah. Baloney. You're asking for information that they're bound to give you, they have a duty to, and they're not giving it to you. That means the process didn't work. That means your due process was violated. That's a federal issue that the upper courts can order the lower courts to fix. So you may have to do that. You may actually have to do a federal suit on them. And I know, you know, there's people out there like, what's her name, that said, hey, can't go to the federal court, it's ridiculous, and blah, blah. It's true, you want to fight local, but sometimes, especially when it has to do with the things that fall under the Constitution, that is the federal government, because those are the things that arise under that Constitution, are those unalienable right things like due process that they violate, and that is the proper court to take it to. Because you can't take it to the lower court, because the lower court has a conflict of interest on it. They're not going to slap their hand and go bad, bad. The right hand going to slap the left hand and go bad hand, bad hand. Because that's what you're asking them to do. Really, think about it. That's why we have these different courts and these separations of powers, in order to try to get some justice. So, you know, and by you running through there and banging around and exercising these things, it's going to bring it back. So you're doing your part to straighten them out just by rattling their cages like you do. So, anyway, you're doing a good job. I wish I could tell you more. I hope, you know, you'll take some, you know, maybe you'll get a nugget from me here or there, how I can help you. But your main thing is to persevere and hope that you find friendly faces somewhere, people that are fed up with the system, which I believe you're going to start getting more and more of that, because it's getting so ridiculous that that everybody's going to realize that this system is broken, okay?
Sure, and back to the vaccine mandates, was it Robert Barnes? He's got this Viva Locals channel you can join. He's keeping track of all the different, he reviews all the different vaccine mandate cases around the country, but one of which is the New York City one, where Trisha Lindsay I think she's from like White Plains or something. Mm-hmm. She sued Bill de Blasio over the vaccine mandate. And there's like a video on it on OAN.
Really?
Rumble, on the OAN mm-hmm. channel and Rumble. But, you know, in the video it said people were calling to join in. So I Google her info and I called to join in. And I've been sending her more info.
So her suit is still ongoing? In other words, she said
it's heating up. She said, keep sending her information. Like, so I've sent her archives of stuff from the Alex Jones, because he seems to have like a depth of material that's backed up by scientific studies and actual scientists that he interviews. And he's been doing this for like 30 years. So I sent him that. I sent him the David Martin stuff, because the David Martin material, he backs up that these patents for both the COVID virus and the vaccine happened well in advance. So this was like all
absolutely. Yeah, I love David Martin. David Martin is fantastic, and he needs to be protected because he has such damning evidence that they're not going to be able to answer. I mean, in their own paperwork, in their own hand, basically. It's really good. And there are lots of suits that are out there, and people can join them. I mean, I know the one that Helmut Fulmer is doing, the German lawyer. But there's other ones that you can join. And
I joined that one, too. Yeah,
I would join them all. I don't, you know. But whatever.
I sent her also the graphene oxide stuff. So if anyone finds stuff or wants to join hers, you can. It's TrishaLindsayLaw.com.
Trisha Lindsay. There was a woman that was an older woman with like white hair, and she was very, very fiery, and she offered to help anybody. I mean, I'm going back 6-8 months ago. She was on the front lines. I got to figure out what her name was. And she was giving talks all over, and basically, I mean, this woman was like a Southern Baptist preacher. You gotta had to hear her jumping up and down. Really spoke very fiery, and had good results in the courts because they don't mess with her. She doesn't put up with any baloney. I have to remember what her name was. I gotta go back to my computer. I haven't heard, but she was. You could sign up, and she would take your case and put you in with a bunch of people with the similar thing, like if you got fired for it or whatever.
Yeah, and I also sent her that, was it the Patrick King and Chris Skye from Alberta, Canada, the case where the court in Alberta subpoenaed all the government officials and the public health officials for evidence that the COVID virus exists.
Right.
And they said
they didn't have
evidence.
It. Right.
So
which is a good case, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much stuff, I can't even send it all to her, you know. But
and all this stuff, and guess why? Guess why they're still giving the shots and acting like nothing's wrong? Because they control the news media.
Yeah.
It's been so, so terrible because the news is not getting out. I mean, it's getting out, but it's getting out through alternative means. Getting out through the keyboard warriors like you and me and other people and these off sites. But, you know, it's starting to gain traction now. Look, nobody's watching CNN, really, and NBC. They're not using that news media to inform them, you know, because it's misinformation, everything they do. But anyway, that's good stuff, Amy. And
yeah,
I got to move.
There was another tweet from, I forget the guy's name, but he does a lot of videos, and he said that the reason Trump in his rally, you know, said he took the vaccine, apparently, and I remember hearing this way back a long time ago, that there's more than just those three vaccines approved. There's more than just the mRNA, and apparently, like, they said that the Trump vaccine is the hydroxychloroquine and the other things combined.
It's probably saline solution.
No, so they said that Trump took the vaccine, but he said there's a choice. You have a choice. So there's some larger menu of choices that they're not talking about on media is what, you know, and I haven't seen a document that outlines all those choices, but.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with X-22. But on X-22 this week, he came out. I mean, there's other people saying this, but he's pretty popular. And when he puts stuff out there, he pretty much does it concisely and documents it. And what he's saying is, look, they have tried to kill ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and some of these other things because they not only cure COVID, they found out they're curing cancer. And they don't want to let that. Can you imagine if we got rid of all the virus stuff? And all the cancer stuff, which is just and you know, the other thing is they're touting intravenous vitamin C, liposomal vitamin C, curing all kinds of just with those three things. I don't know if you know it, but I think is it hydroxychloroquine? I think hydroxychloroquine. They've used it to stop Ebola, which is a horrible virus.
Wow.
It's illness. It stops it in its tracks. Ebola. If it can do that to Ebola, that's why it's so effective on the flu and on the COVID. So everybody should be on a maintenance dose of that.
I also wrote a paper about that for school because it was about an ethics paper, and so I wrote about Lancet Gate, which is a very prestigious medical journal called The Lancet.
Yeah.
And apparently they had to retract an article, which was like an East German Stasi-style hit piece on hydroxychloroquine.
Yes, it was all false data. It was a lie. That's right.
Yeah, so they needed that to take it down so they could get the emergency authorization, emergency use authorization, because there couldn't be any other cures that exist
to get
that authorization. So they actually had to retract that journal article, and the guy who wrote it has, you know, money connections to Fauci. That's what it is.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all good stuff. I got to move forward, though. We got some other people I want to get. Thank you for.
Okay.
It's always good. Thanks a lot, there, Amy. Yeah. Okay. Next in the queue is looks like Michael from Michigan. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerard. Hey. I think pertaining to the flu virus they call COVID, I just don't understand. I keep hearing about FDA. Why are we mentioning the FDA or as having authority of what is approved and what is not being a corp fiction of our corporational system? People in this realm, I don't know why they're putting the FDA on a shelf as being the authority of what's safe and what is not. You have any comment?
Well, because for years the Food and Drug Administration has had that role of a mouthpiece for the government of testing and declaring something safe or unsafe. It's also the CDC also. They work hand in hand, the Center for Disease Control. I don't even know if the CDC is a government agency or not, but it doesn't matter either way. I don't care. They're all corporations basically, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, they're fictions, but you know, look at our whole government is a fiction if you really want to get down to it.
Yeah.
And basically we give them consent to do things, but when they overstep the bounds, then it's time for us to remove that consent and remove that government. And that's where we are right now. You know, at some point they may have had a certain authority, you know, as the experts, quote unquote, but then when you go digging into their background, you find that they all have conflicts of interest, that they've all accepted money from these big corporations and from China, and that's what's going on right now. This is what's going to come out, that all these people that made all these decisions, like Fauci and all of them, they all were paid off. They all have a financial interest. They all have a conflict of interest. And believe you me, the people are going to scream. You know how many people died with this thing that were pushed through and pushed on ventilators? I mean, let's not even go there. It's absolutely crazy, and it's only going to get worse.
A ventilator taking over something that God created it naturally, and the ventilator being exposed to the human body is not natural at all. You're overexposing.
Well,
the body.
Look at there is places where ventilators have saved lives, but by the time you got on a ventilator, you got a 98% chance of dying. And every now and then, if it's used properly and they turn it properly, it can get you over a hump, you know. But you know, how many people were in comas and they couldn't breathe and they had to put them on the heart lung machine? That's a ventilator, I believe. It's breathing for them. And I know people that were on those things for 2-3 weeks, a month, came out of it and completely recovered. And if it wasn't for that machine, they would be dead. But you know, that's not the first thing. I showed a film last week, I think it was last week, about this woman whose husband went in for pneumonia, and as he wasn't there an hour, and Nurse Ratched was talking about putting him on a ventilator, and she did not let that happen, and she forced him to put him on intravenous vitamin C, and he walked out 3 days later. Imagine that, out of the ICU, right? Nobody does that. So that was a lesson for us. As far as the FDA and the CDC, those names, I have, when I hear that, I go the other way. I don't believe anything they say, basically. You know what I mean? So people have been so brainwashed to believing, you know, we have the Surgeon General, you know, we got this, we got that. These are supposed to be people who are at the top of the field that we can trust. Well, guess what? We need to redo all that because we can't trust any of them anymore, because now you got to go into their backgrounds and see who's feeding them, you know, and that's basically what it is. So Okay. I don't know what else to say.
I just want to bounce two quick things off you, and the subject matter of this question would be, who are you? Do you live in a republic? Do you live in a democracy? You can be who you want to be, and what you determine a word and what it means, such as citizen, people, or person, words don't determine jurisdictional authority over me when I'm living in the lawfulness of my Maker and Lord. So what I'm saying here is, if people don't recognize who they are as being kings and queens with the dominion that the Lord has given them to freely, locomotively go through this, through his creation, people won't truly understand their total power.
Well, look, I think we are reaping what we've sown. Most people don't understand that they don't have constitutional rights. They have unalienable rights from God. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
What John always preached early on is don't give them jurisdiction. If you think that the rights come from them, you've already given them jurisdiction.
Yes.
Right off the bat. So you're behind the eight ball before you even start. That's right. So, you know, and there is a presumption when you go into court. First thing is don't go into court to begin with. That's the best advice I can give you. Don't get in there in the first place if you can help it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do get in there, you better use your words very wisely. They got me in court. I won the case and everything. And I was walking out the door and the judge says, what do you want me to do about it? And there was already nothing for him to do because they had defaulted. I said, I think you should put them in jail. I don't remember what I said. Something like, I think you should, like, arrest them and put them in jail or something. So what happened is I gave him the jurisdiction back when I said that. So he turned the case around and ruled on it anyway, ignored the default to find for them. You know what I'm saying? Because it was over. Because there was no trial because they had defaulted. They didn't answer. And I went downstairs.
That's a perfect example. That's a perfect example, letting your paperwork doing the talk for you.
Right. So I opened my big fat mouth because I'm a wise guy, right? And boy, he got me. Let me tell you what.
Uh-huh.
So I had to write another paper after that, just so you know.
Okay, Jared.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a good example of that. But just one quick thing here. People are the law. And we on this conference call, and many people understand the difference between law and statute and statutes and codes, but the state makes law. That is not true, because the people are the law. The state does not make law because of the dominion that God has given us. So we have to start using loosely who makes law. God made law, and his image being human beings subverted his law into statutes and codes.
Right.
So I think that really has to be a pinnacle for just a simplistic understanding of what is law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, hey, listen, thanks for taking my call, and I'll let you get to another caller. And
thanks,
you probably
Michael.
Are thinking, you're Always probably thinking a little bit about getting some sleep tonight, right?
No, I don't do that anymore. It's a waste of time, don't you know that?
Yeah,
laying here not
you
moving.
That.
Yeah.
No, the good Lord wants your thinker really clear for discernment.
Yeah. That's right.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Bless
okay.
You.
Thank you, Michael. Looks like Rhonda. I don't know from what state Rhonda is in. But go ahead. You want to...
Can you hear me?
I can.
Well, I heard the recording last week and listened to the lady that was talking about her husband, since you were talking about that. So I had a few comments to address on that. You know, because it's interesting. Somebody else asked me what my thoughts were on that. Because I had called in before about, I don't know if you remember, a couple months ago on the HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, and gone over some information on that. So the thing is, you know, she was talking about the experience and going on the vent. So what was interesting about that, to begin with, I just want to say she's correct about a lot of things are protocol, because in medicine, a lot of things are protocol. Like she's talking about the yellow gown. So that's standard. Like when someone's in an ICU unit, if they have an infection or something and they don't want people to get it or bring it out, then the gowns are in drawers about outside of that room. You have to put those on and go in, and then before you come out, you take it off. And some things are just standard protocol, not, quote, unusual because it's COVID. But
yeah, if you're using universal procedures, you're absolutely right. But I'm telling you, you know, when they're experimenting with these vaccines and they're weaponizing them, they're in a freaking spacesuit.
Yeah, I know.
You're in a positive pressure. So it's all blowing. Like she said, what about my hair? What about my shoes? I mean, she was just using common sense. So I don't think she was complaining about the yellow gown. You know what I mean?
Right. I know. And I think the issue with that is that you're right. It's not that I don't know that it's common sense, but I think it's tied to what I'm going to say in talking to a physician that knows about what happened and why they put people on vents. I think this is why you get what you get today. And most people probably don't know this out there, which is something I suspect, because I know what the purpose of vents typically are. So like she said about the PCR tests, because I'm sure you know and everybody knows, I mean, they were never designed for diagnosing anything.
No,
I mean, Kerry Mullis said that time and again, but people thought he was, I don't know, a hoax or whatever, you know, just propaganda, who knows. But really, they weren't, and they're not.
Well, the guy that invented them said they should not be used for diagnosis.
No, they're not. And
that's the guy that invented them. Hello.
Right, and the CDC even came out and said that. But most people don't care about it because they hear on the news or they hear wherever that, oh, the PCR tests say blah, blah, blah. And they're so used to being inundated with that kind of thing. But the really main point that I want to get to is ventilators. When they put a person on a vent, you have to understand what the purpose of a vent is. What is it? It's a closed system. So someone's breathing into a machine and they're getting air. So nothing's going out to anyone around them. And that's the whole purpose of a vent. They can't do it on their own. Or, you know, that's generally why they put somebody on that. They're having problems and they need that assistance. And COVID, basically in the beginning it wasn't that way, and unfortunately probably it's still not that way. So in talking to a physician that I don't want to say who it is or where it is, the reason why the medical staff was putting people on vents has to do with one thing, and that is because when you put someone on a vent, they're not breathing at you. Like if you're on high flow oxygen or something like that, you can still breathe, so whatever you have, they could get. And when you put a person on the vent, they're in that closed system,
so
their secretion can't come out, and they know that when they put a person on the vent that shouldn't be on a vent and doesn't need to be on a vent, it's going to weaken their lungs, and the possibility of people dying is huge. And the whole purpose is done is because the medical staff do not want to get whatever it is. They didn't want to get COVID.
It's fear. It's fear.
Whatever you want to call it, the medical staff do not want to get COVID. They don't want
They're more ignorant than the regular people.
What's going to happen to these people? And yes, they go ahead and put them on a vent. Whether they know that the likelihood of somebody really sick is probably going to die, and they know that's going to happen, and that's the way it is. I don't want to get it, so this is what I'm going to do.
Well, it's stupid. It's not a rational decision on their part.
No, it's not. And
what she said was, I was just in the emergency room for an hour before they did this stupid test that they're not even supposed to be using anymore, the invalid test. And then it said COVID. Next thing you know, we're in spacesuits. Well, they don't want to catch it. But meanwhile, here's this guy breathing all over everybody, and his wife had just been in bed with him for a week. They should have locked her up, too, and put her in a spacesuit if they really think that
right.
They don't want to catch
See,
it. You know, like, let's use, you know, common sense here.
I can't explain that part of it. I don't know if it's the person themselves or what, or I don't know.
Look at it. Like she said, it's the protocol that's killing them. They're not using common sense. They're following that protocol like it's like Nazis. You know, we have to do this. Resistance is futile, and they're not allowed to even think over it. Plus, they make extra money too. So there's people in the administration and the other bigger doctors that are making money on this because you get extra money when you put them on a ventilator.
Yeah.
You know, that's the truth of the matter, whether you know it or not. And I'm sure there's pressure to do that more because they have an incentive. You know, so
exactly. And
anyway.
I mean, what the doctor told me was these are the exact words he said. I would say this, and it will be a very, very ugly truth. In the start of the pandemic, they threw people on vents just so that the patient's secretions would be in a closed setting. And that's what I said. So they wouldn't get anything. And, you know, whatever happened.
And you know what? If they really thought that, and if COVID was really valid, or at the time we didn't know that it was not. Look, the COVID-19 is no worse than influenza A and B. It's a little bit more transmittable, but it is not. It's no less survivable. You know what
right.
I mean? It's got the same survival rate as the flu does, which kills hundreds of thousands of people every year that go in with co-committing conditions. And you know, you're older and you get pneumonia, you die. It happens
right.
Every day. And they've created this pandemic, this scamdemic out of it. And that's the long and the short of it. Now, I would have mercy on the people that they scared because it's not their fault. That whole thing, look, they have to get people under fear to get the compliance. And like you said, if those healthcare officials, they didn't know what it was, you know, they weren't giving them enough information.
That's correct. In the beginning, because I've talked to different doctors and all, in the beginning they really didn't. I mean, somebody I know got COVID. He was a person that didn't believe, you know, wasn't wearing masks and all that. He was like us, you know. I mean, you want to wear masks, it's your choice, but
right.
Whatever. But he spoke with his doctors in the hospital. He was very sick. His wife never got sick. At all, but he asked him, "Oh, tell me the truth. I want to know. Do you think I got this because I didn't wear a mask?" And they said, "Absolutely not. They don't do anything. They don't protect you. The cloth mask, the paper mask, do not do anything to stop anything like this." And basically, that is part of what they said. And they said, "You know, really." The reason why we don't know what to do for people and how to treat them for this is because we don't know what it is because nobody can tell us what it is. That's pretty much how they looked at it. And that could be one other reason why they put people on vents and they just did this and that. Because, hey, if I don't know what it is, then I'm just going to treat what I think might help because that's all I know to do.
Well, they better hope they have somebody like you on the jury. That's all I can say.
Okay. I know, you know, I mean, I think all the time about being in medicine, and honestly, I'm so glad that I'm not doing that anymore, because knowing what I know today about what do you want to call them, the globalists or whatever, you know, and all the things that they do, I couldn't do this to people. I couldn't do it. In my opinion, is that an ethical thing to do when you know you're putting somebody on something that you know if they're that sick, it's probably going to hasten their death? I don't think that's ethical, but, you know, I can't speak for other people.
Right.
I mean, if you're in healthcare, you have such a great risk of getting things. I got things all the time. I walked up to people when I was a student in ER, and a lady had some kind of virus, and to put it kind of bluntly, she was thrown up and had diarrhea, and, you know, it's like, uh-oh. Because back then, you didn't wear a mask, you didn't wear gowns. I mean, there wasn't a reason to go up to a patient and gown up and wear masks and all that, you know?
You know what the bottom line is? Your own immune system.
Right, and not eating right and all the things that I did back then didn't help. And I had the flu vaccine, so that didn't help either.
No, that's right. That sets you up. If you want to get the flu, get the vaccine, because that's the fact of the matter.
When I got the flu vaccine, when I was in nursing school, every month I would either get migraines or get sick from everything under the sun.
Yeah, it's
when I left, I quit getting it. I don't get like that anymore.
Yep. Well, thank you, Rhonda. You're good. I look forward to talking to you again in the future. I'm going to move on.
It's like really discouraging, because you can think of all people. Medical people should be advocates for the patient and should do the right thing and do what's needed, not do things because of whatever reason they do.
Right. Well, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, we used to have leprosy patients, and when they didn't know about that, they were scared. But we learned how to handle that, too, didn't we? Anyway, I'm going to move on. Thank you, Rhonda.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I see Jay from North Carolina. How you doing, Jay? I haven't talked to you in a while.
I'm doing okay, Gerard. So I heard that the FDA didn't approve the vaccine. They only approved the extension of the emergency use authorization. And the media and the president are saying that they approved the vaccine.
So it's another scam.
Yeah. That's what I heard, that you can go to the FDA website and find that information, and that I was on another call earlier tonight, and that they were talking, like four or five people said, yeah, they have seen that.
So we got to get that word out, because now, look, they had on the news all these heads of university going, oh, yes, I'm going to require it now because the FDA approved it. I mean, that's...
Exactly.
That guy, they should all go to jail.
Another thing, when the Marines said that, you know, when the head of the Marines said, if you're coming to inoculate or vaccinate us, you better come armed. You know, there's no way we're giving it to our troops.
Well, what the one general said is we have exemptions for military men can get exemptions. Which
if
means nobody's going to get it.
Then they can mandatorily make the military take it.
Right.
But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And then Trump was on Remdesivir or something like that, wasn't he?
Yeah, Remdesivir. But that's not a good medicine either.
Yeah, but that's what he got. He didn't get the vaccine. But
I don't know what he got, but I know he took hydroxychloroquine.
I think it was Regeneron. I think he had Regeneron, didn't he?
Regeneron
or Remdesivir. There's another one. It's an antiviral. But Remdesivir, the one that sounds like Remdesivir, that has some bad side effects. From what I've read, I don't know. I wouldn't.
But I'm wondering if that's what he was talking about. Well, he took it, you know, in his speech. But anyways, I ordered the books a year ago, too, and Vicky says I haven't gotten it. I haven't been home for a month. I don't know when you guys sent those out. But I ordered two of them. One of them should have gone to my sheriff in Yancey County, North Carolina.
Okay. Well,
and
we'll
one
have...
of them should have come to me.
All right, so somebody, we should make a note for Jay and the other fellow there, and we'll have John query.
I think I gave like $100, you know, a year ago for the books.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other guy was
And I filled out a form, you know, saying the Yancey County, I had my courthouse, I had my courthouse address on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you are on the list. I just got a note from Francine, because, so
We had to send a check in for that, right?
Yeah, because it was the pre-order.
Yeah, and Vicky sent it off, and she sent it without a check. And John called me and said, "Hey, I got your thing, but I didn't get the money." And then we went through all this thing, and then he actually let me do it on my credit card. But anyway, we took care of it on the phone. But it was a big rigmarole, but that's when I paid for the books way back then.
Well, I know he still has books there to send out that he hasn't sent out, so I'm sure one of them is yours. And I'm sure that another one is Cody's.
Well, my name is Zitlow, and I'm in Yancey County, so I'm toward the bottom of the list somewhere.
Okay. Thank
I'm
you,
in the last county in North Carolina.
Well, you're not in the last in our book. You're a cowboy road warrior, as far as I'm concerned.
And I am heading home. I'll be home Wednesday, so I'll see if I got it. But I have been home for a month, so.
Okay. Well.
Okay. Thanks, Gerard.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Good night. Let's see. Hang on a minute. So I guess John only sent out single book purchases. He didn't have enough to send to all. Multiple purchases are going out as soon as the new batch arrives. So I guess John was concentrating on the single purchases first for whatever reason. So Jay did a multiple, so kind of delayed you. Sorry about that. But it's coming. That's all I can tell you.
Okay.
You are in there. Okay?
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, good night. And we got a few minutes. I'm going to take Anju because I haven't heard from her in a while. How you doing, Anju?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I had a quick question. I guess I could comment. I'm in San Francisco. There's a lot of stuff happening here with the vaccine.
Oh, I bet.
Mandates and whatnot. One of the city health human resources person is getting sued this week of a couple of people that are pushing back in the fire department, sheriff department.
No kidding. Good for them. That's so, what we need. That's grassroots.
They're using the common law to bring that to court.
I love it. So they're going to let them use the common law?
Well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. The hearing is this week, from what I hear. So we'll see what happens on that.
Right, right.
And I had the chance to meet some sheriff deputies here last week, and they don't know what their job is.
No.
So we have a lot of...
A lot of them don't.
A lot of work to do educating them. But the book is great. I've been reading the book. It's a wonderful book, and everybody should get it and get one for the sheriff.
I agree. And as we move along, we should have it in the schools too. But that's late, you know what I mean, later on.
Yeah.
It's so important.
My question is a quick question just for Brent. He has the common law sheriff's course starting in a few weeks. He talked about it last week.
Right.
I'm wondering, I'm interested, and then a couple other people here in San Francisco are interested in taking that. But I don't know what time it is. So if Brent's still on.
He did mention that tonight, but I...
I'm here.
Oh, there he is. Go ahead.
I'm here,
Brent.
If I'm heard. Yeah. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in San Francisco. 8 o'clock in the morning on Thursdays. Beginning on the 9th of September. And all the information about it, or more information you can get at www.commonlawyer.com, and there it'll tell you how to sign up. If you have a problem, go to the contact page and email, and you can, if you have a problem with somebody, not me, but other people, assistance will help you make sure you get hooked in. This is not to be prohibitively hard, but at the same time, I think, fellow, try to put a little discipline into it. There's some little homework assignments we're going to have. I want you to read the little booklet we've got, and I want you to show that you've done that. Because this is adult education, young people, too. There are homeschool families that have been participating in these, but it's adult education more than anything, and So it's not the long, hard periods of time you put in learning about something. But by the time you get older, you've had so many experiences. I just want you to be consistent week by week, not even day by day, to do it. This is fundamental. The sheriff is fundamental. Need I say more? Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brent. I appreciate that.
Cool, thank you. And, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to you being there. Go ahead.
And all these things that everybody's doing, and the end result is that they will, each one will stack up and make a difference. It's, you know, it's the cumulative effect of a lot of things. And believe me, there's stuff out there we don't know about that's going on that, I mean, I'm talking about good stuff that we haven't even heard about yet. So I'm hoping that John likes to say critical mass. Well, that's basically what it is. Okay. We're actually, maybe I'll do one more person because we're like already a minute over. Okay, Ross, I'm going to open you up. You got a minute.
Okay. I'm starting to fill out a passport form, and I try to look for options of statuses on the application.
What are you filling out? What'd you say? Status form? I didn't get that.
No. I say a passport form for the State Department.
Okay.
And
a passport. You're trying to get a passport with the State Department, yeah? And what's the problem?
It says you're a citizen instead of like states. Instead of a state citizen or a state national.
Well, there was somebody that was writing about that, how to do it different. I don't know enough about it to give you advice on that. I mean, if you got to have a passport, they're going to want to hear that you're a citizen, and technically you are a citizen. You're not a citizen in the way that they think you're a citizen, though. And I don't think that really holds any weight or not. I mean, I would probably sign it all rights reserved and see what happens. But there's other people that have gotten passports without saying they're a citizen. I don't know how you become, you claim that you're a state national or whatever because you're born, not into the fiction. But there's other people out there that know more about that than I do. I'm trying to think of the guy that wrote.
I was saying, yes. I was talking about state citizens and states. You're on the state laws instead of ones that. Because the original passport form probably traditionally had that option on now before they changed it.
No, so they already got smart, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, they...
So hash it out and change it back. And see what they do.
Oh, it means the court, go to the court to say it's an error on the form?
No, I'm just saying change the application form. I don't know. I mean, are you filling it out online? Is it something that you can draw a line in and put what you want.
I print it out.
You print it out, so then you can change it any way you want. And do nice, neat little handwriting. Maybe they won't catch it. You know what I'm saying? I think it's perfectly legal for you to put the right thing in. Even if they don't give you a spot to put the right thing in, you make the spot. You know, that's how contract law is, you know. It's not a contract if you don't have any say in it, right?
Yes.
It's called an adhesion contract. If you have to pick a certain thing, then you didn't have full consent of the will, so it makes it fraud, basically. So,
yes.
And in order for you not to commit fraud with yourself, you have to change it in all good conscience, right? Well, no, I'm not that. I'm this.
Yeah.
Right? So I would just change it and send it in and let them deal with it.
Okay.
They're so dysfunctional, they probably won't even look at it. They'll stamp it and send it back to you.
And how about if I, should I even put my social security number on, if even if I have a social security number?
Well, I think if you don't put it on, they're gonna kick it out. You know. So I wouldn't even worry about
it. I actually read the part says for the tax part for the passport. They say if you never got a social security card, you just put 000 on it.
Right. If you never got it. So I don't know.
I actually do have it.
I know, and I don't know if you put 000, they may be able to figure that out. I don't know if they'll bother doing that. You know, but look at the social security number was given to you. It's fraud. You didn't agree to it. You know what I mean? That's kind of like their number. Their number. I mean, now it even says it's their number. You know, so they're requiring their number. It's not your number. It's their number.
Yes, because I actually read in the back of the social security card. It says their property.
Right. That's their property, right? It's their number. So they're asking you for their number, you know?
They're making me a slave.
No, I don't think it matters either way, because if you're aware of it, you're never going to go anywhere, and they're going to go, well, we're doing this to you because you have a Social Security number. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, most of these New World Order minions don't even realize that much. You're giving them too much credit, basically.
Credit?
Yeah, they don't even understand that.
Okay.
Write it really messy and make it so they can't tell if it's an 8 or a 9 or, you know, or a 7 or an 8 or whatever. I don't know what else to tell you. Okay. All right. Anyway, have a good night, and we appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll see you back here next Monday. Thanks a lot, Ross.
Yeah.
And thank you, everybody else. We appreciate it. But it's late, and we have to go now, so.